House will come to order. We're at that order of business, consideration of bills on general file. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The plan is to work this bill until 3:30 or 3:45, then go into general file and work until 5 o'clock, or we get as many bills done as we need to get done to stay on schedule. With that, Mr. Speaker, I move... I move that the House resolve itself into the Committee of the Whole to consider the budget bill, House Bill 1.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. We're resolved into Committee of the Whole. Representative Gay.
No, I'm just going to give a little pre-speech, and I've talked to Rosie about it.
The Committee of the Whole will please come to order. The reading clerk will read House Bill 1.
House Bill 1, General Government Appropriations, an act to make appropriations for the biennium commencing July 1st, 2012, and ending June 30th, 2014.
Representative Yagi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Folks, I hope you'll indulge me for a minute as I give my pre-budget speech that I gave last year. Just remind you that with dwindling revenues, mainly from the gas prices, our expenses are going up, and they've been referenced, and we're about double from our 2001-02 budget that we had. And I think we'd be wise to follow a little saying that I've turned into one of my models that I've got on my desk: use it up, wear it out, make it do, or go without. I think, you know, we'd be very wise to be doing this, use a little restraint as we work on the 13-14 budget. I have given you two handouts, and the first one is the 2001-02 budget. Everybody has this. It's been on your desk. And then it's a comparison of what we have in 13-14, or the 11-12 budget, the recommendations of the supplemental budget, and the recommendations of the governor for this budget. So have a look at that and see how we've grown agencies in numbers and funding. So there's my first little point that I'd like to make. The second one is concerning the number of employees that we have in the state, and I'd like to reference the governor's message in the state budget for 13-14, the first section on controlling the size of state government. He said there's all kinds of employees, and as we're looking at all the employees, there's a variety of counts depending on the funding source. I've just listed them: at will, the executive branch, classified employees, part-time, commission site employees, and AWAC. I think it's hard to find how we list all these, and the governor made mention it's hard to count how many we have and where they are. So I'm wondering if one of the proposals that need to be made is a 10% cut through attrition, trying to get back to the 2001-02 levels of employees. And that leads me to the handout, the next one that I handed you, and that is the salaries of the state employees and of UW. And I don't point this out to throw rocks at anybody. I just point it out to say, hey, have a look at it. I remind you that our governor makes $105,000. The other four elected officials make $92,000. And I think it's very complicated. I get into the budget and what little I understand. I want to thank the governor and the appropriations for their time and effort to get the things that we have before us. but I would really like to understand it more and urge that we all use a little restraint in trying to keep a flat line instead of continued upward climb with revenues going down. So there's my pre-budget speech. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Well, good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen.
Chairman Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. What I'd like to do before I we start working on Senate File 1, the government appropriations, I'd just like to make a few comments and then give you a few other hints on things that you might need in going through this. You know, finally, it's time for us to work on the 13-14 budget. I wanted to thank the governor, his staff, the executive branch, and the judicial branch, their staff, our A&I staff, and especially our legislative service office staff and our JAC committee staff and my JAC members. And if all my JAC members are, or my House appropriation members are present, if you just stand up, I think you all know who they are. But I want you to know where they're placed today so that as you have questions and we're working through the first reading of the Committee of the Whole Budget, that would be great, okay? But anyway, standing up, there's Ms. Representative Stewart's in the back, Representative Pedersen, Representative Edmonds, Representative Esquivel, and Representative Wallace, and Representative Harshman sometimes shows up for appropriations. So there we go. That's our team. I want to give everyone just a great hand for bringing the budget together. And ladies and gentlemen, I understand that at this moment most of you are just wondering how you're going to get through this week with the House appropriations folks. But more importantly, I wonder how we predict about the year 2013-14 as we prepare a budget, and even further out, how we prepare a budget for 2015-16. I think what you will find in this proposed budget of $3.3 billion, with approximately $15 million on the table yet for you to appropriate, that we have a good foundation working towards 2015 when we look at the gas prices having plummeted in the process of the governor working his budget, our first go-around at the budget, and currently as we look at the budget today. When you're at $4 of gas and you go to $3.25 and then you go to $2.50 and then possibly to $2 in MCF, it makes a different picture on your financial outlook. So let's just keep that in consideration. But at the same time, I want all of you to think, wow, what a great state to live in, Wyoming, where we are able to propose a balanced budget, that we have a legislative stabilization reserve account that has more than $1.4 billion. We have a permanent mineral trust fund. We have funds in our school foundation, capital construction. The list goes on and on. And I think you'll find with the budget that we have tried so hard to put in place one-time spending that would allow for the development of economics in making our communities more robust and healthy, helping with education, looking at specifically our communities and how they can grow and enhance and even at some time sustain, like our local government and that type of funding. What we're entering is a period for several years in which economic growth will not be sufficient to bring in revenues that will allow us to go back and restore cuts that we made in 2009 and 10. And for many of us on the committee, we deliberated how best to build this budget. I think we came to a consensus that we had to slow down the cost of government services, we had to prioritize our one-time funding, and we have to be able to stay the course during a weak economy. Remember, Wyoming was chosen the best-run state in the nation, and I hope that we can continue to have that title. You will notice that we didn't cut standard budgets for 13-14 in the majority of the agencies. We did deny exception requests, and those are different. It's over and above an operating budget for 2 years. You'll notice the one-time infrastructure funding, and you'll also see that we've had numerous conversations with the Department of Health. I think that's one of the areas that I've certainly had many conversations with my fellow legislative members on, and one of the biggest areas is the Medicaid funding and the deficit that we have in that budget. I feel confident before we end this budget on February 27th, based on working through Agency 48, the amendments that we have, the Section 300s, that you will be comfortable going back to your community saying we are on the right track with working with the Department of Health and their future operations, and at the same time making certain that we serve the people of Wyoming. And I would add a comment here that this is when we as legislators have to be very engaged, because we're the ones who drive the policy, make the decisions that are priorities for our constituents. We always need to be cognizant of that as we go through working a budget and creating policy that they align with the stars. Also, you're going to see that we have several Section 300s in your budget, and we have several pages in regards to capital construction. We anticipate questions on that. As we try to prepare for the unknown, which doesn't even include what is going to happen at a federal level, we have asked the agencies for the supplemental budget to come back with an analysis and a recommendation of how they, as a director, would cut 4% in the 2013-14 budget. And we've asked them to look at an 8% cut for the years 2015 and 16. I think it's important to realize that what we've done is we're taking a deep breath, slowing it down a bit, having some time to analyze and make really conscientious decisions on how we create a good, healthy budget that's sustainable. You know, flatline seems to be the word of the day. And I think flatline's pretty good considering most of the 45 other states that do not have a situation as positive as the state of Wyoming. I wanted to mention also that we and JAC just don't work on the budget. We, as many will claim, that we work on a lot of policy and we work on a lot of other issues. And just to name a few so that you're ready for them to come over, a lot of these bills started on the Senate side because we started redistricting. So with the time sequence, you haven't seen many of these bills yet. But just to keep in mind, Senate File 30 and 59 and 97 all deal with the retirement system and our state employees or a fund like Highway Patrol, Game and Fish, some things like that. So those will be coming over. The school facilities capital construction bill is Senate File 105. That's being worked in the Senate currently, and that will be crossing over when hopefully our AML will be crossing over. We're working the House Bill 121, AML. We worked on the Senate File 41, Wolf Management. And one of the other big components that you're going to see a lot of in your budget is Senate File 33, which is the OCIO, or we also have a division in the budget that's 306. And this is dealing with creating a new division and moving the IT technology out of most of the agency budgets, except for areas like when we're talking about the auditor's office or the treasurer or some things like that where there is specific hardware and technology that's critical to the job that they perform. So you're going to see a lot of shift in funds there. And I think I'll leave it at that. But that's just some of the bills that we worked on in JAC and are carrying through. We've had questions about making certain on the funding codes. And if you look at your House Bill 1 or Senate File 1, you have on the front three pages, you will have the definitions of all the funds. So when you're looking at your big cheat sheet, there'll be a code next to it. And you can just reference to that bill to find out where that revenue source is on that. I thought if it would be all right, I just wanted to make certain that there weren't any other just process questions that any member would have before we start working the budget. All right, and you also received the two handouts, your cheat sheet for the budget, and also all the graphs. And just if you're like me, having to wear reading glasses a lot now because of the budget session, there is a big graph up here, which I think will help you understand the concern that we had. Again, I think that there is still a lot of sunshine left in Wyoming, but it's necessary for us to be cautious. And so with that, Mr. Chairman, I would move Senate File 1 and ask for your favorable consideration. So it's House Bill 1, I'm sorry.
House Bill 1.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I've got the wrong piece in front of me. House Bill 1. And ask for your favorable consideration. And do I need to vote on that, Patty, to open it up? Okay, great. Thank you. And then I will move Section 1, which is the Office of the Governor. And we're just going to be dealing with the exceptions. I'm hoping that your copy will run along and you'll see the revised governor's rec. So we've had his initial proposal that was on December 1st. Then we had the revised, and then the center column is our JAC changes, and then our final total on the right. So. Of course, what you're going to see in most of these budgets at the first line item is going to be the technology information services and moving that out of a particular division or agency and consolidating that into the OCIO's office. One of the other things that we've been working on, and this was a proposal on line 2 here by the governor, he's the one that started it first with his office, and that was a 5% reduction in Series 900. And for those of you that are not familiar with that, it pertains to special services, professional services. The other two, and so what we did is our JAC members took the lead on that, and in many budgets you will see a 5% reduction in the 900 series, the 600 series, and the 200 series. Right, and that was a decision made by JAC. What we found is that we think that there's flexibility there, and it was a great way to start scrutinizing these different areas that they have some, the agencies have some latitude in. And, for example, the 200 series is supportive services, the 600 is grants and aids, and then, again, 900 is the special services. All right, continuing on, then on line 3, we added a footnote. If you remember last year, we worked with securing a deep water port in the western part of the United States in order to move Wyoming's renewable sources. Item 4 is a $250,000 appropriated for comprehensive energy and water policy. Then we also, just to remind everyone, we have a series of governor's letters, and I have them up here in front. And these are letters pertaining to changes that the governor either did not support or supports once he had submitted his proposed budget to JAC on after December 1st. So the next item has to do with a governor's letter, and that was reducing the mega data center funds that we had appropriated last year of $15 million by $5 million. And what we did is the JAC committee actually denied that, amended it, and retained $10 million there, and then reappropriated. It gets a little bit confusing, so that the amount is still intact at $15 million, and that's for big projects related to data centers. Line 6 has to do with a contingency fund, and it's just carrying that over for 2013-14. Line 7, we just increase the spending authority for federal funds that is a pass-through for security, homeland security grants, counties, and tribes. And then in Section 304, this is the disaster contingency fund that we appropriate on a biennial basis to the governor. And again, it's allowing for carryover of $750,000 into the 2013 budget. And we made a reduction in federal funding, domestic preparedness grant funding, because it had not been renewed. So we had to adjust that. And I need a little assistance on the authorization transferring the Public Safety Communications Commission. And I'll just get that from Bill.
Is that a staff member? We moved those to another place.
Right.
Right. And that's to adjust for OCIO legislation for their staff. And then on line 11, we again have an appropriation for carryover for the existing funds in the natural resource policy account. And then the governor also took a 2% reduction in his budget, excluding Homeland Security, of $204,409 from the general fund. And that entails the highlights of the governor's office of the governor's budget, Section 1. I'll stand for questions.
Chairman Childers. Mr. Chairman, Madam Chairman, for the natural resource policy account, do you have any details on the expenditures plan for this budget year from the governor? Plus, do you have the amount that's being carried over into the account?
One moment, please. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There's $1 million in the account, and they're adding the $750 to it. And I think if you just look at page 72 of the budget, it goes through a list. Let's see. Litigation, the Yellowstone winter use, forest planning, BLM lists several projects there with the Bighorn Basin. Sage grouse.
You're talking about, excuse me, Mr. Chairman, you're talking about the regular 8.5 by 11 budget.
Correct.
Okay, on page 70.
On pages 71 and 72.
Okay. Thank you.
Chairman Berger?
If there are no further questions, I call for the question on Section 1.
Question being called. All in favor of Section 1 of House Bill 1, please indicate so by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. Section 1 of House Bill 1 has passed Committee of the Whole. Moving on to Section 2. Chairman Berger?
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move Section 2, Secretary of State. And you'll note there that we have few exception items to deal with, and the first one again is the OCIO move of those funds. And line 2 of that is recommending the full-time position to convert from federal funds for the Help America Vote Coordinator to an AWAC position to full-time and permanent status to operate that system. And line three of the governor's rec is to work on a specific or specialized software for the Secretary of State's office, and that's $305,000. And then one of the items that's somewhat new to our budget process but is appropriating some funds for any constitutional amendments that pass in the session and need publication. And if there are no questions on Section 2 of the Secretary of State's bill, I would call for the question.
Representative Wallace.
They're all just ready to help me.
Question being called on Section 2. All in favor of Chairman Berger's motion on Section 2, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No. Section 2 of House Bill 1 has passed Committee of the Whole. Moving to Section 3, Chairman Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move Section 3, the State Auditor. And again, down at the bottom, the first page of your cheat sheet, we'll start with number 1, which is adoption of OCIO transfer of IT funds due to the consolidation. Line 2 deals with appropriating funding of $500,000 in the auditor's account for brucellosis testing and with meeting the approval of the governor. Item 3 is a reimbursement to the Game and Fish for loss in license revenue for reduced price licenses mandated by statute. It's a policy that we've made over the last few years on different types of licenses. And the fourth item has to do with appropriating $3 million of endowment fund challenge money for public libraries that will be in the auditor's office until they meet the matches that are required based on existing statute. And the fifth item has to do with employee benefits, health insurance for retirees, and it's $5.2 million, and this is a biennial amount that we do based on the membership, and that, again, too, will sit in the auditor's office. And seeing no questions, Mr. Chairman, I would call for the question on Section 3.
Chairman McComey.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I believe I heard the Appropriations Chairman say that we kept the $3 million and the others, and on my sheet they show that they've been removed. What does that mean?
Well, I see what you're saying. One second. Hold on a second. Because the Cultural Trust had a $3 million tune, so I'm just wondering on that.
Chairman McComey, Chairman Berger's.
Thank you. It was explained to me that these funds have just been removed from this budget and sent over to a challenge fund part of the budget. So my question was answered by another member of the committee. Thank you.
And I appreciate that, Mr. Chairman, because we just found that. So thank you very much.
Chairman Berger.
Madam Chairman, or Mr. Chairman.
Chairman Teeters.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Madam Chairman, on this brucellosis program, I know we have a brucellosis program under the department, Ag Department, in another part of the budget. I just was curious why the governor wanted to park that $500,000 there.
Chairman Berger. Representative Wallace.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I believe the reason the $500,000 is in the state auditor's office is that because it requires the governor to sign off on the funds before they are expended.
Chairman Berger.
And Mr. Chairman, that is correct.
Is there further discussion on Section 3? Further discussion. Section 3. Question being called on Section 3, House Bill 1. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No. Section 3 has passed the House of Representatives. Chairman Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move Section 4, the State Treasurer, and defer to Representative Pedersen to present the budget.
Representative Pedersen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I bring to you the budget of the State Treasurer. Very exciting. This is the 04 budget. $14 billion of your money is invested in here, so this is a really good one to pay attention to. In this particular budget, we have a couple of different items there in footnote 1 and 2. Footnote 1 is for software and equipment, and then footnote 2 is more of that same language that you're starting to see as we move IT responsibilities to the Department of the OCIO. Where you start to get into the other significant pieces that aren't repetitive in many of the other pieces is number 3, and that is a $528,000 general file appropriation for veterans tax exemptions. This is part of the veterans tax exemptions based on a high level of participation for the taxes exempted by property owners, qualified veterans, and widows. We've just had an increased level of enrollment in it, and it's been a great program and a very successful program that we've been able to implement, and you're starting to see more people taking advantage of it. In footnote number 4, you have an increase of $4,500,000, and this is actually paid for through the agency fees to pay for the investment manager fees. As we've made additional funding from external investment management fees, have been an increase due to the fact we have increased value of the funds through both deposit and performance, and because it's paid for on an absolute percentage basis, as the account is increased in value, so it increases the what you're paying for. And that also ties in with the number 5 footnote there, and that is with the WyoStar program, and that is paid for by all the participants within the fund, which is made up of local political entities, and again, this request is simply the agency's expenditure authority to do so based on increasing participation. And with that, that is the 04 budget.
Is there any further discussion on Section 4? Chairman Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Since I do not see any questions, I'd call for the question on Section 4.
Question being called on Section 4. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No. Section 4 has passed the House of Representatives. Chairman Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move Section 5, the Department of Education, and I defer to Representative Edmonds.
Representative Edmonds.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ladies and gentlemen, I bring you Section 005, the Department of Education. We have quite a few footnotes, so I hope you'll bear with me. On the cheat sheet, the first footnote is, JAC, we added, and if you go into your actual budget bill, pages 10 and 11 is where the Department of Education is at. We added footnote number 1, requiring any changes to leased space to be approved by the State Building Commission. And you can read it. It's 3 lines. That's essentially what it says. Number 2, we added footnote number 2, requiring any movement of funds between divisions and between units within divisions be made using the B11 process. And if you're not aware of the B11 process, it's the process by which agencies use. They go through the governor's budget office, and they ultimately get approval from the budget office and the governor to make any changes. And we're simply asking the Department of Education to go through that B11 process if they want to move funds between divisions and units. Then footnote number 3, or item number 3 on the cheat sheet, We adopted the governor's recommendations for $229,649 general fund for IT. The department actually asked for $337,618, and this is just for their scheduled replacement of laptops and desktops. They do laptops every 3 years and desktops every 5 years. The governor approved $229,649, and we agreed with him. Number four, we adopted the governor's recommendations on OCIO, and the good chairwoman explained to you the process of OCIO. That amount is $335,391. Number five, we reduced the 0900 series, and I think you already saw that once under the governor's office. We just tried to start taking a swipe out of the 900 series and trying to just sort of pick off places where we could see a little bit of fat. And so we reduced by 5%, and you can see the totals there. The overall total is 173,193, 2,975 in enterprise funds, 42,000 in general funds, and school facilities of 128. Item number six, we adopted the governor's recommendations of 49,338 simply in the agency fund to give them budget authority as far as this is the Montgomery School of the Blind. This is allowing them the ability to do additional grants. So we're just giving them budget authority to expend some more funds. Number seven, we moved $280,000 from S5 into a separate unit. We asked the agency to come back and build a budget for their teacher-to-teacher program. They did so, and in doing that, we went ahead and put it into their budget and gave them that amount of money to continue on with that program. Number eight, we transferred $141,225 in general fund and one IT position to the OCIO's office, and that's by the governor and the OCIO's request. Number nine, we adopted the governor's recommendations to add another $160,000 general fund for the tribal schools funding. Then line items 10 through 15, these are all simply decreases. And if you want to know more about each of these, this is decreases in federal funding. This is all initiated by the feds. They have chosen to cut all of these programs. And if you want to know more about each one of them, if something's interesting to you, I have their budget here. It all begins on page 114 of their actual bound budget, and I can show you that. I will have you note, though, on line 12, or even when it comes to Even Start, the Family Literacy Grant Program, we did add some more money back. If you want to put a little sticky note or remind yourself, when we get to the Community College Commission, Agency 057, you can ask questions then about the Even Start program. We did put money back in for Even Start. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is the Department of Education.
Chairman Teeters.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Footnote 9. First of all, I'd like to know why we're adding $160,000 to tribal school funding. And then I'd also like to know the methodology behind why you chose to take it from the general fund and not the school foundation account.
Chairman Berger, on footnote 9. Chairman Teeters, could you repeat the question, please?
I guess I'll answer the question.
And the answer.
Footnote 9 with the tribal school funding has to be funded from the general fund because it is in support of the poor, and that's the constitutional way to do it. And it is the BIA school, I believe. So,
Chairman Ulloway.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to ask on footnote 3. Now, we've got an OCIO, and we're going to put a lot of funding into that from other places. And yet on footnote 3, it notes that the department is going to purchase $230,000 worth of IT software and equipment, but I see nowhere that the OCIO has a little oversight in that. It seems to me that if they're going to buy that much software and equipment and we're going to spend X dollars on a new department, that there ought to be some oversight.
Chairman Berger.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, the good chairman from Cheyenne. This was approved by the OCIO. So, ladies and gentlemen, when you go through this budget, the OCIO has approved all software and hardware components of the budgets prior to it being submitted. And some of the corrections come with maybe not having had enough time to analyze the information, and then we brought something in JAC to correct that. So that's how we treated it.
Chairman McComey.
Thank you. I think this is a better way to go, because it allows these departments to go ahead and do their needs and justify their needs to the OCI, instead of the OCI being the purchasing agent for every department. And in the past, that's become problematic when it was being done through ANI.
Chairman Korberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just need someone to refresh my memory what the teacher-to-teacher program is all about.
Mr. Chairman, how many pages of information would you like on that? But I think Representative Edmonds can give you a quick synopsis.
Representative Edmonds.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. No, what I was going to say, and I think maybe the good chairwoman was going to say, we can make a request to the department to give you that information. Obviously, it's their initiative. They probably should provide that. None of us would be equipped to tell you what that is.
Representative Patton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to ask the committee chair or somebody that worked on the committee relative to special programs in secondary education that I understood was going to be there, and there's probably an item that doesn't show the itemization of such things as we the people, but I understood it was there.
Representative Edmonds.
Go ahead, yeah. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman, that is treated in the Department of Parks and Cultural Resources with their in the same area that they are appropriated for History Day.
Is there further discussion on Section 5? Is there further discussion on Section 5? Question being called. All those in favor of Section 5, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Section 5 has passed the House of Representatives. Chairman Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Point of order. Section 5 did not pass the House of Representatives. It passed the Committee of the Whole.
My bad. Passed the Committee of the Whole. Chairman Berger.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move Section 6, the Administration and Information Division, and prior to the good Representative Pedersen speaking on A&I, you're going to see that there's quite a bit of information here for him to work through. One of the things that I wanted to point out to you, as we were discussing the OCIO's office, we had a division built 306 that's further back in your cheat sheets, which we in JAC zeroed out, and we moved back into A&I, all right, the funding for that. And that also coordinates with Senate File 33. That is being worked over on the other side of the house, and we'll all coincide together. So just to help you out, and if you would, you can then just also in your big handout, we have two pages on how the OCIO will operate and should look to help you through that. All right, and with that explanation, I'll defer to Representative Pedersen.
Representative Pedersen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Madam Chairman. I'm going to work from our big sheet, and I'm going to start working my way through and talk about each one of the pieces in order, and then do my best to expand on them and be ready for questions. In the first one, this is more of the IT software equipment that was approved after being first approved by the OCIO originally, so we can have, they've had feedback, so this is the computer purchases. Number two is, you'll see this throughout there, and we made a concerted movement to take a look at the 900 series, which is all of the contract pieces that we do, and decrease them by 5% where we saw, and you see $127,000 of that is in there, and what that pertains to is a human resource ops of decrease of 78,283, human resource training 5,117, employee group insurance piece for 43,644. So that's actually a grouping of a series of 900, a number of 900 series. The next one down is when you start to look at, I'd like you to look at Well, actually, number three is that we adopt the governor's direct to move $265,000 from general fund to the OCIO for information technology services consolidation, and that's part of what we've talked about consolidating into the separate budget. On number four, I want you to connect that to number six when we're talking about it, because one actually works with the other. What happened was they eliminated a $77,000 general fund in one vacant position, and then with that money, they purchased a postage mail sorter machine. And so that's where you'll notice on between four and six, pretty much a level swap there, so they got rid of a position and added a machine. For number five, originally this is kind of a larger piece. This is, I'm actually going to open my book to give you a better explanation of all the numbers as I write them. Now, this is our risk management section, and what this is where we look at self-insuring our state. We currently have a fund of about $40 million, and that's what the actuaries have said that this balance is. Typically, we put about $10 million into this. We spend about $3 or $4 million per year is the average spending, and what the purpose of this account is tragedies that happen to the state. A big snowplow runs into another car. There's a lawsuit. This is here if you get a big dam that were to break. A whole series of things that we set, because what we used to do. So you used to just wait to get sued, and then you found the money somewhere. And so this proved to not be a very good process over time, as I asked about how did the history of this come to fruition. They said, what we need to do is create an account to start putting in monies every biennium so that we can have something to draw monies out of. When we looked at, for all of our government tort claims, and like I said, the snowplow drivers was the example that they used in there, but the governor had originally, in his original recommendation, done a couple of things. One is that instead of funding it with the full $10 million, funded it with just $6 million, and then that's where you have the $1.5 million of IS, that's an internal service cost. And what that essentially is the interest. So the interest would then pay back into it, plus $6 million. Well, the decision that we kind of, after talking about it on JAC, is that this is a large enough pool of money, not a large enough pool of money for something fairly catastrophic. And maybe you're right, if a dam were to break, it would cost more than $40 million. But we thought there was an important enough fund to have our own self-insurance piece. So that's why you'll see that we rejected the governor's letter. So what essentially happened is we went back and put in the full $10 million that we have appropriated. And if any of you have your individual budget book pieces, it's page 37, and it shows your 9, 10, 11, 12, and now 13, 14 general fund being at that $10 million level in order to keep the self-insurance pool running at that same level amount. The next piece, now I spoke of six because that was how it coordinated with number four. Number seven here is $7.9 million to purchase fleet vehicles. All of the fleet vehicles go through here for the majority of our budget pieces. This is also an internal fund. It's paid for when you purchase the new car. You buy more into it, and what you have is a maintenance portion. That this amount goes into a fund, grows over time, and this is what you use to pay for it ongoing. That's why we don't have a new car every time coming through the general fund. We actually created a fund that will purchase a new car as it depreciates. We have that coming up. From the same process is number eight, and that is a $2.3 million increase for motor vehicle expenses. Gas prices go up, a series of other pieces, and that's part of what's inside that internal service fund. There are two corrections on this, and these are important pieces for a couple of them. On number nine, $117,000 for custodial equipment in the liquor warehouse. There's actually a combination of these in here. This is custodial equipment as it pertains to both the liquor warehouse and the Capitol. It's a total of two funds, one being $51,272 to buy a big fancy floor scrubber for the new liquor building, and then we also have a purchasing for $66,437, and that's going to be a floor scrubber, snow removal. The current equipment is 15 years old. That takes care of the Capitol, and it's time to update those pieces. So it's actually put together into one piece, and it only mentions their liquor warehouse, but it's actually Capitol equipment as well. Also on number 10, there's a correction there. This says $185,000 for custodial contracts in the liquor warehouse and joint labs building. It's actually maintenance contracts. It's not custodial services. It's maintenance contracts because there's a lot of complex pieces that goes into maintaining these various buildings. So it's not a cleaning. It's a maintenance issue. And so those are important to note on there because there's a difference. We added footnote one, and this was a piece to conduct analysis of all the surplus property cash transactions that we make. And you'll see it there on it's line six in your budget on page 12 and how that piece comes in there for the last 5 years. Then we have next one down. Oh, the governor to reduce $610,000 for vacated lease space by the Game and Fish and the Public Defender's Office. Quite simply, they're not using it anymore, so we're not going to pay for it anymore. The governor adopted seven. This is the JAC adopted governor's letter seven. This is an issue that people have talked about. $10 million of general fund for employee compensation. And we talked about there were a couple pieces in here. There was a performance link piece, and then there was a another piece as it comes in for long-term raises or one-time bonus raises. And what happened was through the process of repeatedly talking about, again, back to that $4 gas for 10 years and currently sitting at about $2.40, $2.45 for gas, we run into a really tight position. And the way that I've articulated it to folks is there are two people sitting here, and they both get a raise. And then we come, and we truly do have to do next biennium an 8% cut. Well, then one of those two people aren't sitting there anymore. They got a raise of 1%, 2%, 3%, but now they have twice the work because it's not like the work went away. And there just wouldn't be enough funding for this piece. So we made a decision that says, okay, we want to keep our employee count level, and in order to do that, we won't be able to give everybody a raise as we go. And this is our thought process as we went in. You'll notice that that's the truth. On a series of these increases, the governor agreed and made that recommendation. We adopted to reduce on number 14 is to reduce $250,000 internal source for employee training costs. Truth is, we do most of this in-house, and most of it's online, so it reduces your travel costs. So because we don't need to spend it, we won't. Adopted the governor's rec for $133 million for anticipated health claims and added footnote 2 and a quarterly report to Joint Appropriations Committee outlining steps for reducing costs. And when you see in there, as we look at these increased health care costs that continually hit us, one of the pieces in there, it talks about necessary prescription drugs, preventative services, adoption of healthy lifestyles, looking at different ways because how can we control these costs, and maybe some of it can be done on the front end through evaluation, and that's something that the governor also thought, and this was the verbiage that we came out with. JAC adopted the GovRex to eliminate $365,000 and three positions added for the additional workload due to the school district participation in the health insurance plan. Do you remember we folded in school districts originally to this to our employee health insurance plan? And what we originally did to get the numbers out for you is we brought in. I'm on the wrong line here. Sorry. One moment. There we go. Originally, we added 15 positions to this, thinking that there was going to be a huge option for school districts to add to the employee group insurance and really ramp this up, the positions. And this is actually going to tie into a later footnote as we come together. We filled two. And so what we did is then we said, all right, well, we'll completely get rid of three positions, and later on I'll talk to you about what they're going to do with the remaining of those positions. When we get down to, we'll skip one first. Well, no, we'll go. The governor also did the $2.9 million for anticipated dental claims. That's once again internal service cost that it's just a spending authority. Where you get on the next one is to reduce $1.2 million for 10 vacant positions. Remember I talked about that they added 15, filled two, and they just flat get rid of three. Well, now we're going to also get rid of the appropriation for the other 10. maybe they bring them back if they have an opportunity, because you get a high level of participation. But at this moment, it's not, and that's why it's broken out in two different pieces there. The governor's rec on number 19 is the $6.5 million to accommodate voluntary interns. This is, once again, pending authority, because this is paid for 100% by participants, and we need to allow that to go through. On footnote number 4, this is directing an economic analysis, and you can see there, shall undertake a study of the feasibility of converting school district motor vehicles, including school buses, to natural gas. The department shall report to the Joint Appropriations Committee options for retrofitting, differential costs, the feasibility of using natural gas. We talked about this a little bit with a bill earlier, a trial program, but this is a look at how would that all come together. We adopted the Gov's Rec to realign the funding of three technology positions and agency support costs. This results in no monetary effect. And to give you a better explanation on that, let me flip to my piece. What happened was a few of the pieces were no longer eligible to be funded. Federal fund, other pieces were. So what you had was an exchange of federal fund, general fund, where pieces go. It ends up being even Steven, so that there's no initial, no costs added to that, actually. Then we have, we adopt $101,000 for IT overtime costs. That's just been part of part of this conversion, having different folks working later, so we need to cover those costs. And then the Gov's Rec to change funding for equipment, and this is a decrease of $2.2 million in general fund, and switch it to an internal service cost again. And then on 24, you have the IT position and corresponding money transfer from the Department of Education, and that's a specific move as we're trying to, once again, go through the consolidation purpose. And when we go through, the bottom one references Senate File 33, and that's the creation of the OCIO. And where this puts in there is we have an added one-time funding position to authorize transfer from Public Safety Commission to the Office of Homeland Security, but it's pending the passage of Senate File 33 to see where that comes in. And those are a few of the questions, and I see a possible mic up there.
Representative Yagi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I told you I went to last year's budget and then compared it, and we're up $148 million in this agency, and we're getting explained why, and if you have that, they're looking for that answer, but that's quite an increase.
Chairman Korberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I need a refresher course on how the Liquor Commission's budget works. I know they collect taxes. Are they mostly responsible for their own budget in and out? Because I guess I'm questioning why we're giving them general fund money for the custodial, the floor cleaner. So that was one of my questions, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Croker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a quick question. On the section where it shows authorized employees, it shows in the governor's budget 247 and the JAC added 121 full-time employees. I'm trying to figure out who those employees are and how they're getting paid for and all that.
Representative Edmonds.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just to answer that last question, that to the good representative, that is all the move over. That's not a net increase in the state employees. That's the move over of the IT people into this agency. They still exist as state employees in other agencies. We're not adding those people. We're just moving them over to the IT, and you'll see that in the OCIO bill. And then one other question to answer the good representative who was asking about the overall big growth. The number one driver of that is adding the Natrona County School District to our state benefits pool. So that's the number one driver in that large number that you're seeing. And then it's just a whole bunch of other things spread across 2 years.
Chairman McCormick.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I've just, on footnote number 20, where you're going to study the conversion of the school buses, I believe that the Department of Ed is responsible for school bus purchasing, and it makes would make more sense to me to have the Department of Education look at this, and the buses change out on them. They're changing out hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of buses every year, and that would be the time to do this. Get the buses coming from the factory already equipped rather than try to retrofit it, because it costs a lot more money to do it that way than it does to take an existing bus and retrofit it.
Representative Pedersen.
I think that I'll try and get what hasn't been answered first. It's we added 158,000 square feet to the liquor warehouse, and it's part of the way that we currently fund major maintenance is done through general fund and not done within its internal piece. But it does collect taxes. It's our number one. It's our profitable agency that dumps money in, but it dumps money in general fund and goes back around. But it's the way we fund the buildings when we build them, and so it's just part of that piece. And then I think that the study will probably say exactly what you said there. Is it probably, most likely, cheaper to buy them when they come in new? But that's part of what the study will reflect, and we'll at least have all of the information given to us, and then we can make a decision if we ever want to do a build to that. And on the funding level, you know, it's that $133 million increase that's because that's what this represents, is an increase. Every one of those pieces is an increase, and that's because of the increased insurance pool cost, people folding in, people folding in, but also increased healthcare costs. And that is really where the bulk of this growth comes from. If you just go through each one of these and you line by line add them up, those are your largest pieces, really.
Chairman Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And just to further the conversation on the OCIO, if you turn to page 22 of your cheat sheet, you'll see the section 306, Information Technology Services. You will see the total number of authorized employees of 121. And then when you move over to the JAC total, you'll show that that's zeroed out. And that's when we made the conversion back into Division 6.
Representative Harshman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just if you're on page 2 of your cheat sheet, just a little clarification so we don't get the hate Casper thing going. When you heard that comment about the growth in this budget is from Natrona County School District. If you'll look at the top of page 2 and you see the different, when you look at the JAC total, you see the first column are general funds. And then the next one is FF, federal funds. And then the next one is other funds. Does everybody see that? The very top of page 2, top right-hand corner? Does everybody see that? Okay. So if you follow general fund all the way down, for A&I, it's $101 million. That's not a significant increase from the last biennium. Okay? If you go federal funds, not a significant increase from the last biennium. But if you go other funds, it is a significant, it's like, I don't know, $20 million or something more. Maybe it's a little more than that. And those are, if you look, see IS, these different codes, those are internal service funds. So the Natrona County School District flows employee money from the district through A&I, and it makes the budget go up to 608. But that's not an increase in any state money to anybody else. Every district gets funded insurance just like state employees do. Is that some clarification on that? So it's not extra money. It's just paid to A&I instead of paid to a private provider. Does that make sense? I'm seeing no nodding up and down. I don't know. Okay, I'll stand for any other questions. Thank you.
Chairman Berger. Representative Esquivel. Chairman Berger.
Mr. Chairman, we have no further questions. Then I would call for the question on the Section 6.
Question being called. All in favor of Section 6, please say aye. Opposed? No. Section 6 has passed Committee of the Whole. Moving to Section 7. Chairman Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move Section 7, the Wyoming Military Department, and I defer you to Representative Esquivel.
Representative Esquivel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. working on the cheat sheet for Section 7, the Wyoming Military Department. Those first two footnotes are for the OCIO and the technology services. Footnote number 3, that $198,000 for utilities and building maintenance, one-time funding, that's the building over on Bishop Boulevard. Used to be part of the federal government. They've abandoned that space, and it's all part of the state's responsibility now. And footnote number 4 was to replace a vehicle. This is a larger diesel truck that has the towing capability, a flatbed trailer on the back of it. That was for $50,000. Footnote 5, $61,343 general fund for support costs, and that's for a computer network, one-time funding. Footnote 6, $208,801 general fund for Camp Guernsey land improvements, one-time funding. Footnote 7, $24,032 general fund for the Casper Armory lease cost. Footnote 8 is us accepting the governor's rec again for $319,979 federal funds for 3 firefighter positions, and those are effective immediately. And footnote 9 is $79,187 general fund for building operating costs, one-time funding, effective immediately. Footnote 10, governor's rec again for $190,000 AG for building operations. Footnote 11, accepting the governor's rec for $132,312 federal funds for a one-range support specialist position, effective immediately. Footnote 12, another $132,312 federal funds for one GIS position, effective immediately. Footnote 13, governor's rec for $667,483. That's an S5 and a reduction of $528,260 federal funds to be in compliance with the Youth Challenge Program federal grant. And you should also have an executive summary on your desk for the Youth Challenge Program. I thought there might be some questions on that, but hopefully that executive summary and that colored sheet behind it explains some of those questions. Footnote 14, where we adopted Governor's Letter Number 2 for $2,755,955 S5. For the 12 positions in the Youth Challenge Program. And then what that JEC added, that footnote number 1 for the Youth Challenge Program, and it's notwithstanding the Wyoming Statute 19-9-704. That's the sunset date. That bill is in general file or in the Senate. And footnote 2, that the appropriations of that program are notwithstanding Wyoming Statute 19-9-702. Those are the funding ratios where it was 60% federal, 40% state. Those have otherwise flipped now. That was part of the Committee of the Whole Amendment. Footnote 15, the governor's rec of $136,690 general fund for one veteran service office position and related support costs for that. Footnote 16, the governor's rec for $75,000 general fund to contract with the Veterans Service Organization, and that's one-time funding. And that last footnote, accepting the governor's recs for $350,000 general fund for startup costs for the Greenhouse Living Project, and then we added that footnote number 3 you see in the budget bill for starting the funding, and that's contingent upon the passage of Senate File 11, and that is also on general fund in the Senate. I'll stand for questions.
Representative Yankee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On number 14, question about why we're adding 12 new positions to the Youth Challenge Program.
Representative Escobar.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We had two starts in the past, and what we're doing now as we're going to four starts, and they'll overlap. So essentially you'll kind of have a senior class and you'll have a junior class in there. The Adjutant General and Judge Hartman, Governor, they all thought that by having one of these troubled youth wait 3 months, 4 months to get in the program would be too long to fall through the cracks. And actually, when you look at those figures on that colored sheet, that spreadsheet, you'll see where actually those costs really, you know, the bang for the buck that you're getting by having those two extra classes, where it comes back to benefit the state. So those 12 positions are for adding the two new starts within the Youth Challenge Program.
Representative Bonner.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a question with respect to the billeting costs. I thought that the billeting program was operated on own source funds, and if you would explain, differentiate between footnotes 9 and 10. 9 has general funds, and then the 10 has agency funds. What is the $79,000 billeting cost out of general fund?
Representative Esquibel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The difference there is it kind of works like a per diem, and then the other one is for Camp Guernsey, and it basically be like your hotel costs, the laundry, having people come in, do the laundry, buying things like sheets, soap, towels, and that's the best way that the AG or Adjutant General explained it, is that it's almost like running a hotel, and that's what those billeting costs are for.
Chairman Berger.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I would just add that it was about $7 million that flowed to the general fund. $7,000, and it's just a reversion, and we're just trying to get it refunded back to them so that they can utilize it.
Any further comments on Section 7 of the bill? Question being called. All in favor of Section 7, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no. Representative Reeder.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If we could, we could take a little break for a second, because, I'd like to have privilege of the floor.
You may.
Thank you. I wanted to, fellow representatives, ladies and gentlemen, it gives me great pleasure to present to you, all the way from Casper, Wyoming, Wyoming's PBS 2011-2012 Home Child Care Provider Award winner. She was awarded an award last night. She was nominated by her friends, co-workers, and other professionals in the early childhood field, recognized for her outstanding dedication on quality child care programs. She has traveled here with her daughter, had breakfast at the Governor's Mansion this morning. If you would, please stand and join me in giving Kim Weinrich and her daughter Jordan a big Cheyenne House welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Welcome. Picking up where we left off, Section 7 has just passed Committee of the Whole. Moving on to Section 8. Mr. Speaker.
I'd like to take privilege of the floor if it works out, since we just had a little break here. Ladies and gentlemen, today I had the privilege of attending the Boys and Girls Club Youth of Youth Luncheon, where they had a bunch of great nominees, the kids that have some really great stories, and especially great stories about how they were helped out by the Boys and Girls Club. So today, and I believe they're still here, I got a note, and I had to wait for this timeline. They are. All right, great. So I want you to acknowledge a couple people here. We had the Youth of the Year winner, Chris from Cheyenne, and the runner-up, Jessica, who is from Park County. So if they'd stand up so that we can congratulate them. And I see Chris. It was was a great presentation over lunch, and they gave out scholarships, and I know Chris was the recipient, I think, of a four-year scholarship to the University of Wyoming. So it's a pretty big deal. Congratulations.
Representative Esquivel.
Privilege of the floor, Mr. Chairman.
You may.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, actually tomorrow morning we are going to be honoring one of our own. The Wyoming Youth Services Association has selected Representative Patrick Goggles as their Legislator of the Year.
Well, Mr. Chairman, we could start doing some aerobics, too, and that might get this excited.
Chairman Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think we're now prepared to move Section 8, Office of the Public Defender. I will defer to Representative Esquivel to give you an explanation.
Representative Esquivel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ladies and gentlemen, bring you the Office of Public Defender. And moving on to the next page, footnote 1 and 2 are those repetitive ones on the IT software and technology services. Footnote 3 is $300,000, $255,000 general fund, $45,000 special revenue for capital case funding. Footnote 4, $27,000, which is $22,950 general fund, $4,050 special revenue for the purchase of a vehicle for the Lander office. Footnote 5 is $5,000, $4,250 general fund, $750 special revenue for increase in MVMS rates. And footnote 6, JAC added three attorney positions and funded them with $534,052, which is $427,242 general fund, $106,810 special revenue from 900 series. And I know there's going to be a question on that.
Chairman Korberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess I just, SR stands for Special Revenue Fund, and I just now, I guess, realized that the Public Defender's Office has one of those, and where does that money come from? What generates the money that's in the Special Revenue Fund for the Public Defender's Office? Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Esquivel? Or Chairman Berger?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There are several different resources for that pertaining to crime victims, compensation, fines, restitution, just various things like that that are in that fund.
Representative Esquivel.
And that's pretty all much all of this. It's those three positions were really they were contracting out attorneys for those positions on the backlog in the GAL cases, and it's actually just cheaper for us to have those in-house and take care of those backlog cases in the GAL program that way.
Any further discussion on Section 8? Any further discussion on Section 8? Question being called. All in favor of Section 8, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no. Section 8 has passed Committee of the Whole. Moving to Section 9, Chairman Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Prior to moving that, I'd just like to let the legislative body know that you can receive the cheat sheet on the intra-web of the legislature, and it will be your first item posted for any of you that are trying to follow it on the Internet.
Representative Stewart.
And Mr. Chairman, I'll move Section 9, the Wyoming Pipeline Authority, and I will defer to Representative Stewart for explanation.
Representative Stewart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I bring you Section 9, Wyoming Pipeline Authority, probably the simplest budget we'll look at. When you look at your cheat sheet, there are no footnotes. So, and the reason for that, we don't even have any conforming OCIO footnotes because you'll notice, well, you don't have the budget book, but there are no 400 series in their budget to carve any money out of. Another Well, first, just to explain a little bit, Wyoming Pipeline Authority, what is their purpose? They do two things. The first is to try and reduce the price differential for natural gas that all of us have a good education on, and of course, the other purpose is to increase natural gas export volume. And they have been very successful in that regard with WPA assisted with the development of the Overland Pipeline Project from Opal to Kansas. Now, when you look at your budget, the $1.2 million budget for WPA is all general fund. You will also notice that it shows on your cheat sheet there are no employees, but I can tell you that they do have two part-time employees, one full-time and one part-time contractor. All of those positions are paid out of contract 900 series, so they're not really listed as full-time employees. But we do have some personnel in our Wyoming Pipeline Authority. If there are any questions.
Any further discussion? Section 9. Question being called. All in favor of Section 9, please say aye. Opposed? No. Section 9 has passed Committee of the Whole. On to Section 10. Chairman Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move Section 10, the Department of Agriculture, and I defer the explanation to Representative Wallace.
Representative Wallace.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Working down through the footnotes for the Department of Agriculture, the first couple, as you see, are the standard ones that we're seeing in every budget, or almost every budget. Number three is another instance where the committee decided to cut the 900 series by 5%. So that 5% cut represented $51,112 split between $3,250 in agency and $47,862 general fund. Footnote number four, we adopted the governor's rec to provide $350,000 of federal funds to more accurately reflect agency funding and to eliminate the need for B11 one-time funding. And number five, this was pursuant to Governor's Letter Number 2, and that was a request for $30,000 of general fund for livestock market reporting. The situation here is that there had been federal funds that supported a market reporter based out of Torrington that also covered the other livestock auctions in the state, and when those federal funds disappeared, there was simply no way for that service to be done, and so the governor requested that we fund that so that we could keep that pretty essential function for the industry there. Line six, we adopted the governor's rec of $205,137 general fund for lab equipment, and this is in the weights and measures building. It's a new building, and so this was for some equipment that they need in order for that to be functional, and that's the reason for it also to have a footnote making that funding effective immediately so that they can get that building up and running. Footnote number seven, we added in $236,150 general fund for a scale truck. This is a truck. Every scale in Wyoming has to be certified by the state, and it was a very old, very archaic, very unsafe piece of equipment that the committee did feel needed to be replaced. Number eight, adopted the Gov's rec of $50,000 general fund for seed lab operations. Number nine, we adopted the Gov's rec of $200,000 general fund. This is one-time funding for wolf management in eastern Wyoming, outside of the wolf area. And we did add a footnote on that one as well. It's on page 17 of your budget bill. that money could only be used for purposes of wolf management. And that the total funding in the bill, let's see. Senate File 41, should it be enacted into law, not to exceed that $200,000. Then line number 10, $125,000. This is the special revenue fund to accommodate increased food establishment and swimming pool fee collection, $75,000 and $50,000 respectively. These are paid for by the fees that are, you know, paid by the people who are receiving the inspections. Number 11 adopted the $100,000 general fund and added $100,000 for rangeland health assessment, making the total $200,000 general fund one-time funding for rangeland health assessment. Number 12, we reduced $250,000 of general fund for the state fair matching funds that were appropriated in the prior biennium as one-time funding. Number 13, we adopted the Gov's Rec of $30,000 general fund. This was to purchase a front-end loader for the state fairgrounds. Number 14, we adopted Gov's Rec $200,000 special revenue for weed control costs. Number 15, Gov's Rec $1.2 million general fund for predator management system, or the grants, predator management grants. And 16, we reduced $2.37 million general fund to correct double funding of the Gov's Rec for the predator management district grants. It was just an oversight that needed to be taken care of. And number 17, we included $59,746 special revenue to accommodate increased fee collections.
Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A question for the good lady from Campbell County and our good representative on the Appropriations Committee. I have a specific question and then a more general question. On item 9, where we're going east of the normal wolf impact areas, does that reach all the way to Central Park?
Mr. Chairman, I believe that ends at the Wyoming line.
That's good. The second one is more general, and that is that there's federal funds that are being reduced, and we're replacing what was the needed issues with state money. And did we in the appropriations process have a way of running up how many federal fund reductions that we're replacing with state funds so that as we look at this budget, we can see the impact of what we're getting in the way of less service from the federal government and that we had to pick up by the state?
Representative Wallace.
Mr. Chairman, when you're talking about this budget specifically, the agriculture budget, the only piece that we actually replaced federal funds was the $30,000 for the livestock reporter. Outside of that, I don't believe there were any others. Madam Chairman will correct me if I'm wrong.
Chairman Berger.
And thank you, Mr. Chairman, and for the good question. If you took line 4, if my recollection serves me correctly, that $350,000 of federal funds are for grants that are given to the ag folks, and it's a pass-through, I thought. And so it's just grants, and it's just their way of allocating it, and they were trying to be more transparent in how they did the funding rather than go through the B11 process. And we actually have a few of those transactions where we where the agencies made that change. So it's something that they expect, but again, it's one time. It has to come back in a biennial budget to be requested and processed.
Chairman Korberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was just wondering what the discussion was about making the wolf management funding one-time funding. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Chairman Berger.
Mr. Chairman, thank you for that question, and I don't recall us discussing the wolf funding as one-time funding. I think that because of the legislation that's being proposed, I think that discussion was left there. And we just addressed some of the other predator issues with related to the wolf.
Representative Peasley.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. That wolf issue, I'd like to ask you to pursue that a little bit further. I wasn't aware that we were into the management of wolves in eastern Wyoming. Is this something new, or did I fall asleep during the presentation? Thank you.
Representative Wallace.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And yes, it sort of is something new. Never before the wolf management dollars prior and existing are all focused in the wolf management area over around Yellowstone Park and cannot be spent anywhere else in the state. And we now have wolves spreading out, including in my area. So should there be wolf depredation outside of the established wolf management area, this money can take care of that problem for us.
Chairman Berger.
I think we're good there, Mr. Chairman. Are there any other questions of this agency?
Is there any further discussion? Representative Burkhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a question on the wolves in eastern Wyoming. Does that leave southern Wyoming out? I think that should probably be modified to the rest of the state.
Mr. Chairman, it's for the whole state. It's additional funding that's put in the predator account. So I don't think we'll leave any wolves out.
Okay.
Further discussion on Section 10. Further discussion on Section 10. Do I hear a question? Question being called for. All in favor of Section 10, please say aye. Opposed, no. Section 10 has passed Committee of the Whole. Moving to Section 11, Chairman Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move Section 11, the Department of Revenue, and I defer to Representative Harshman to give you the explanation on revenue.
Representative Harshman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Agency 11, Department of Revenue, has six divisions. You can see them. I think, does your cheat sheet match up with our cheat sheet? Is that the bottom of page 4? Is that where you find it? They have a smaller version. Well, if you'll find Agency 11, Department of Revenue, it has six divisions. You can see them: Administration, Revenue Division, which is all the things you'd think in revenue, and then Valuation is more the property tax, the Liquor Division, the Liquor Sales and Purchases, and the General Fund Transfers, which are generally profits from the Liquor Division. Okay, so 129 employees. You can see the funding codes that most of it is enterprise funds or special revenue. I don't think there's any general funding in this. If we want to go through the footnotes, the first two are the IT. Those are kind of spread throughout the entire budget and put into one footnote here for one and two for some equipment and then for transfer of services to the OCIO. Footnote number three refers to the revenue division. There's a sole source provider for cigarette stamps, and they increased the price of their printing by 375%. So while we look at other options, this is a cost we really can't avoid. And so there was an appropriation one time that we can get this situation figured out and get a different provider or do something different. So that's footnote number three on the cigarette stamp printing. Footnotes number four, five, and six are with the valuation division. JEC adopted all the governor's recs on all three of those. The first one is the $280,000 for the CAMA system maintenance one-time funding, and this is the property tax system that our county clerks and folks have worked with. It's been an ongoing project the last couple of years. Number five is the governor's rec for the property tax refund program, and this is one-time funding. The fact is that the program has had more use, and so we need a little more money. to really meet the obligations that we've passed in our statute. If you have questions, I have more information on that program. I believe I'm on number six, replacement of CAMA hardware, $350,000, the program that we talked about for county property taxes. Number 7, 8, 9, and 10 are with the Liquor Division. $25,000 for a vehicle. Currently, the division has a borrowed vehicle from the state motor pool. Has 118,000 miles, and the state motor pool wants that car back. It's our understanding they need a car mainly around Cheyenne. So there was a governor's rec of $25,000. We approved that. The next one was $98,000. For warehouse equipment, I believe it's two electric tows, two forklifts, one pallet jack. The other ones they have gotten pretty dated and are worn out, according to the testimony we got. Number 9, $270,000 for the Epicor computer system, upgrade one-time funding. Again, this is kind of the whole federal compliance and with the liquor division. And so it's been an ongoing process, and I think this is getting to the end of that process. Number 10, JC adopted the governor's rec of $100,000 for seasonal warehouse workers. Seems like sales go up, I think, in the summer, and so they need a few more part-time employees. And then the general fund transfers is $2 million, and you'll see the total has been 25. I guess business has been good, so they have a couple million more dollars to transfer back to the general fund. So I'd stand for any questions on the Revenue Department, Agency 11.
Chairman Childers.
Mr. Chairman, Coach, could you tell me on the CAMA hardware with the denial for the replacement by the governor? Now, they're just going to have to use the existing. This is not an indication that the CAMA program is being stopped, is it?
It is.
Jump right in.
Representative Pedersen.
He's chomping at the bit, I guess.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. One of the pieces that they came to us and they talked about this upgrade for the CAMA system is still in its beta form in one of the southern states from here. So, and we've called them and said, as a state, we've called this other state, and they said that they're having a lot of issues with it. And they're not even at a point of full launch yet for the CAMA. So what we have now is CAMA 4. This is the update to CAMA 5. And what we're going to do is wait for them to get the process right. We can't. All we were doing is be putting money into it now. It's not even deliverable for a year. So when we come back next time around, once it's through its beta stage, if we see that we can adopt it within our current system, we'll have a software upgrade. But the system in and of itself is not where it needs to be yet. So hopefully we'll have the opportunity to buy in later. But that's an update from CAMA 4 to CAMA 5. So we'll continue to maintain 4, but 5 is still in its beta stage.
And the good news on that, Mr. Chairman, is that the CAMA system now is working effectively, efficiently in all 23 counties, with all 23 counties having taken training in operating the CAMA system and updating it. So this is good news for the state of Wyoming.
Representative Harshman. Any further discussion on Section 11? Question being called on Section 11. All in favor say aye. Opposed, no. Section 11 has passed committee of the whole. I do not have on my cheat sheet Sections 12 or 13. Am I okay to go ahead to Section 14? Chairman Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move Section 14, Miners Hospital Board, and again we'll have Representative Harshman speak on it.
Representative Harshman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Section 14, Miners Hospital Board, you can see it's special revenue. All these funds come out of a sub-account of the, let me get that right, it's the Miners Hospital account, which is a sub-account of the Permanent Land Fund. And there's some restrictions statutorily on how much a percentage of the interest income they can spend. I think it's 5%. They've actually never spent the 5%, but you can see that budget. Really, there's a board of nine folks, a board of directors, appointed by the governor, approved by the Senate. I think they're all from Campbell and Sweetwater, all the board members where most of our mining takes place. And then there's an executive director, that one salary. There are two AWAC employees, and we have reallocated those folks. One works half a day in Gillette, and the other works half a day in Rock Springs. But really, their duty then, there's three things. The hearing aid assistance program. They have a mobile wellness testing program where they've really literally traveled all corners of the state, and then the miners' medical assistance program. This program has undergone a lot of change in the last few years. It's, you know, the testimony that we had is pretty well shored up and looks in good shape for the future. So I'd stand for any questions.
Any question being called on Section 14? All in favor, please say aye. Opposed, no. Section 14 has passed Committee of the Whole. Moving to Section 15, Chairman Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move Section 15, the Attorney General, and I defer you to Representative Pedersen.
Representative Pedersen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As we work our way through the Attorney General office, I'm going to ask for some patience with you. There are 28 little pieces that we're going to discuss, as little as $4,000 and all the way up higher, because we're covering the program, law office, criminal investigations, Bighorn Water litigation, Law Enforcement Academy, Peace Officer Standard Training, Medical Review Panel, Victim Services, and Governance Council D. So all this is falls underneath the same piece. So there's a whole series of things. So I just ask for your patience, because this will be, fairly lengthy. So in the very first budget right there, we have the governor's rec of $469,000 broken down between the general fund, federal fund, and then within the school facilities for the IT software and equipment approved by the CIO prior to this purchase. On number two there, we have the movement, and you'll see that same OCIO language there. On three, this is going to be, we eliminated a position, $222,000, and a vacancy. This particular position had been unfilled for 16 months, and so if it's not going to fill it, then we'll remove it. On the fourth, we have our rec for $534,000 to fund three existing positions that were previously funded with the water development account. And what happened here is we hired these folks originally for the Wyoming, Nebraska suit, and since then it's kind of come in and they've filled other positions in there. The problem is that if we don't take this in, why this is part of the governor's rec, is that a few arguments. One is that AGs tend to get a little better treatment in court, but also if we had to get outside counsel, it would cost far more. We'd end up having to go probably to the state south of us and get counsel, would end up costing millions of dollars. So it's a significant savings to have your own in-house expertise when dealing with all of the issues that we end up with as a state. The next line down there on number five is a reduction in the 900 series by 5%. This is one of the largest that you'll see. This is part of the money that's held in there for the recalibration and different things that come involved with school funding. And so it's a big number in there, but it's a 5% reduction, and you'll see that that's what we did across the board on a lot of these. We adopted the governor's rec for $143,000 for vehicle maintenance. This is one-time funding. And then we did $32,000 for scientific equipment. That piece is on 7. Sorry about that. Maybe we don't have a question, but I thought it'd be thorough. It's for the labs, and it's broken down into wireless digital transmitter recorders, and then for 8 is the, once again, the government's right for vehicle replacements. This is 10 vehicles that need to be replaced, cost per vehicle about $170,000. When you come into this is lab equipment on number 9 there, and that piece is broken down for a couple of pieces. One is a $205,000 scanning electron microscope. These pieces tend to last 8 to 10 years. Ours is 15 years old. The cost of maintenance is now so high that it's become prohibitive, but we got a great deal on our trade-in because the parts are still
usable, and so we end up getting a little savings on that. And then the second part of that is $98,000 for a gas chromatograph. I don't even know. It's a mass spectrometer. Anyway, these things last about 6 to 10 years, and ours is currently sitting at 14 years. I've clearly never used one. Then we adopted the Gov's Rec of $135,000 general fund for one-time existing records analyst position and changed it to from part-time to full-time. When we put in, the next one is to reduce $500,000 and eliminate the Bighorn Water Litigation Unit. The reason is it's no longer needed. I'm not doing it anymore. This was send that money back. Gov's Rec to increase $25,000 to increase bandwidth at the Law Enforcement Academy. This is one-time funding. $18,000 for radio equipment used for training the Law Enforcement Academy, and that's where you're going to, all of these, all the way down to 21, are going to be all of the same type of Law Enforcement Academy issues. We also have an increase of $14,000 for food costs. This was one time to catch up with. We had JEC also approved $20,000 to purchase two training sedans. They originally asked for $62,000. These are your you practice chasing people down with. And so $62,000 for two things that you're probably going to crash is probably not a very good investment. So what they do is they get the older vehicles that are used from YDOT, and then in exchange trade change services for training, and so it ends up being a nice cost savings for us. $5,000 for iPads, fairly self-explanatory, and then we did a construction of mock jails. This is paid for with enterprise funds, and these come in for a whole series of pieces in there. We have also $5,000 for computer battery backups, $9,500 for electrical upgrades, and then $10,000 for dining hall chairs, and $4,500 to replace heavy impact training suits. So the trainers put this suit on, and then you can pretend it's a high combat situation and take a beating from people you're trying to train. In 22, you have $9,000 for the hearing cost. This is to make sure that you have... we have an increased hearing costs on all these pieces, but 2,000 of those dollars need to be effective immediately for finishing out this section of the biennium, and specifically because the cost has gone up for us. I actually made a couple of nice little notes here. All the different travel, postage, supplies for administrative hearings throughout the state. We have $100,000 to pay for victim examinations. We did adopted the Gov's Rec to correct the funding of two positions to decrease the federal fund and increase the resources, resulting in no change in the overall dollar amount. $450,000 for shelter providers. This is one-time funding. We actually gave about half, but this goes to all of the shelter providers throughout the state on a grant format. $50,000 for child advocacy centers. This is one-time funding. And we adopted the Gov's Rec of $48,000 for increased victim provider salaries to accommodate the funding model due to the 2012 or 2010 census results. And then those footnote two shall not be required. The provider should not be required to submit unduplicated counts of the number of victims served in order for to qualify for funding, and because there seemed to be some confusion about that. And we put those pieces in, so looks like there's some mics, and we'll go from there.
Representative Yagi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Having to do with the number of employees, looks like we got rid of one, went up three, and two more. Last year we had 253. With all the changes, we're down one from last year. So that's good. But why do we need 252 employees? Can you just kind of help me understand that?
Representative Pedersen.
252 employees are across a series of places. Obviously, at the Law Enforcement Academy, there's a lot of training there. And then you have all of your attorneys that are serving in the Attorney General office. One of the things the adding of the three employees was we had those three employees and we paid for them out of the water development account. We're now just paying for them out of the general fund. And instead, those are actually the people who were already in there and they were funding for a specific piece that we had. So there's up and down on the and a decrease on one, but those three are actually fairly level. But you have across the board, this is a larger area, and it covers a lot of different pieces, especially with the training of peace officers.
Representative Thrum.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I apologize if I missed this, but what's the rationale for not continuing to pay those folks out of the Water Development Fund?
Representative Pedersen.
That litigation, Mr. Chairman, that litigation is over. And we originally hired them for the Wyoming-Nebraska lawsuit, and then we decided that we'd keep them on because the types of things that they're covering right now are outside of just water issues. And so we're keeping them on because they're become experts in a series of areas that we need in-house counsel for.
Chairman Kohlberg.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. But on a little bit lighter note, all of us who have either been peace officers or peace officers out there really recognize that when you're training on how to drive, there really is a need for speed. And so I would just have to question reducing that budget for those training sedans down to $20,000, Mr. Chairman. So won't you agree? Thank you.
Mr. Speaker, pro tem.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just real quick, did I miss, what was the mock jail cells? I didn't hear that explanation. And then number two, just going back to what the good representative from Cheyenne just talked about, even though that lawsuit's not still going, I'm assuming those attorneys still are in the water law part of the office. Why can't we keep paying them out of water development if they're working on water law cases? And then third, the crime lab, we increased some of their workload last year, especially with the new SPICE legislation, where they're looking at more and more testing of SPICE, and I know that's been a big deal to them. Did you guys talk any about helping the crime lab out with that, or was that a discussion?
Representative Pedersen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll go through a few of these. One is we did not bring up a lot of the SPICE communications that I have any recollection of, and if anybody thinks otherwise, they can come up. The construction of the mock jail cells is part of the training in practice skills. It's actually paid for with enterprise funds, so it's not generally funded. So this is within the monies that they're collecting themselves for a whole series of things. And the enterprise funds in the Law Enforcement Academy are paid for. Also, you have just people who show up for training, a tuition piece, or if they, let's say they want to use the facility or the shooting range or any of the pieces, they pay for that with their. Well, part of them being in law enforcement is you will have to deal with a jail cell probably at some point, and this is how you run a mock situation with that. And then these sedans come out of, it's actually, it's an exchange is what you end up with. So we end up then exchanging training services with YDOT for that. And I'm sure there's some fast ones in the pool that we could pick the fastest horses out of there.
Are there any further questions or comments on Section 15? Question being called on Section 15. All in favor, give a good, enthusiastic House of Representatives aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Section 15 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, brothers and sisters of the 61st. I've been meeting with the Chairman of Appropriations. With your permission, we would like to go to Section 48, Department of Health, and then after that, do four or five bills so that we can keep that process running as well. That will consume additional hours of our time and maybe intrude on some of the receptions, but for us to get the business done in a fashion that we need to proceed, that will be the necessary approach. If there's any objections, please let me know, but your goal is Section 48 on the budget tonight, and then four or five bills after that.
We're moving to Section 48, Department of Health, on your cheat sheet. No? No?
Mr. Chairman, do not give my good representative from encampment a heart cardio. vascular attack or whatever we want to call it. But anyway, no, we're going to just continue in secret.
Chairman Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move Section 20, the Department of Environmental Quality, and defer to Representative Stewart for explanation.
On Section 20, Representative Stewart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Section 20, Department of Environmental Quality. And this is a rather large budget. Friends and neighbors, what you'll see there is about $220 million for the biennium, with no growth in their budget. But I can assure you that there is still growth in their workload, even though we're seeing some waning in our energy activity. Mr. Chairman, DEQ is made up of different divisions: administration, air quality, water quality, land quality, industrial siting, solid and hazardous waste, and abandoned mine lands, AML dollars. I'll try to explain some of the work that we did in JAC. The first thing, in administration, we approved a Gov's Rec of $100,000. They recognized that they needed to review some of their operations and workflow and see if they could improve some of their services. That would be in footnote 3. I skipped right by footnote 1 and 2. Of course, these are the same conforming amendments that we've talked about before with the OCIO and the IT purchases. Going right to the footnote 4, what we found out is that the $1.8 million had become, for air quality issues, had become part of, incorporated into the standard budget for DEQ. And it was AML dollars that was used in the past of prior balance monies. What we found is that the prior balance monies were already appropriated for, and then we had a governor's letter after they recognized that put that $1.8 million back in the budget and used general fund dollars. So what we did, we denied that Gov's Rec letter, Gov's letter number 2, for the $1.8 in general fund, and we put that in AML dollars again, and that was put in House Bill 121. We talked about that this morning. Any of the AML dollars from prior balance or repurposed AML dollars is not in the DEQ bill or section agency 20. They're in House Bill 121. The next footnote 5, is the $1.475 for ozone study in the Upper Green River Basin. That has been and continues to be AML dollars, and that has also been moved into House Bill 121. We talked this morning about the orphan sites remediation and reclamation, $2.2 million in AML dollars. That, of course, has been moved into House Bill 121, coming out of either prior balance or repurposed AML dollars. In take a minute to explain to you footnote 7. Some discussion about in our solid waste management division, as we move, transition, if you will, from a lot of municipal landfills around the state to transfer stations, there was some comments that perhaps they would need fewer people going forward in the solid waste management division, and thought that perhaps some positions could be eliminated going forward through attrition. I can assure you that this may be met with some resistance from DEQ, that, of course, the Solid Waste Division has many positions in it that does way more than working with our landfills. Colleagues, you will see when you look in your budget bill, there is a footnote that you'll find in your budget bill right here, footnote number one, that describes that elimination of six positions through attrition as they are left empty, that DEQ will not be allowed to fill those positions going forward. The next footnote, footnote 8, initially the governor wanted to put $15 million more into our fund for landfills to address future water quality remediation. His initial recommendation changed some of the purpose that we could use some of those dollars for, and perhaps to help some of our landfills make that transition from a landfill to a transfer station. There are costs associated with that. After we had a revised revenue forecast, the governor reduced his recommendation of 15 mil down to 10 mil with a governor's letter. JAC brought that number back up to $15 million, again, to add to that fund, and we stayed with the original language in the footnote as far as how we can use that money. And the language that I refer to, you will find in your budget bill under Section 20, is footnote 2. And just to, there were some questions this morning, the differences between when we look at our AML dollars, the prior balance, the repurposed, of course this year we're repurposing a lot of money. We also have, when you see, looking at your cheat sheet, number 9, or the last one in your cheat sheet, $133.6 million. This is money that's dedicated actually to reclamation from abandoned mine sites. This is the biennial appropriation. I have a list of where these projects are, where we'll be spending these dollars in the next couple of years, and that is in addition to all of the other agencies within the division. And I would stand for questions. I have lots of notes here. I hope I get a lot of questions.
Chairman McComey.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a concern with your note number 7. The way this note is worded, if somebody were to leave before these transitions to these regional landfills and things are done, while we're still having to inspect and do all these other landfills, that position couldn't be replaced. The way I read the wording in this note, that gives me pause for concern, because some of these regional landfill things you're talking about are a great number of years in the future, and I'm just. Did you take that into consideration when you worded this amendment?
Representative Stewart?
Yes, we did have a good discussion on this, and I think it would be fair to say that Agency 20 was probably not happy with the reduction, that we, or I have heard that perhaps it may impact other parts of solid waste in their division. How many of these six positions are assigned to landfills or not? You can see that when I talked about there has been no growth in the department, we've stayed at 269 employees. With this amendment, that would be reduced. And I guess the consensus of the committee was that perhaps there was enough flex within the department that they could make this up within their agency.
Representative Thorne.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Following up on the good representative from encampments, comments. I guess for the benefit of the body, I'd point out that it's a little bit of a misnomer to call this the Solid Waste Management Division, because it is the Solid and Hazardous Waste Management Division. And so my question is, when you eliminate six people ostensibly because they're not needed for landfills anymore, what are we doing to hazardous waste management, which is federally required, and as the name suggests, deals with kind of nasty stuff at our large refineries and other facilities. So was there any discussion on maintaining the integrity of the non-landfill programs if you're eliminating positions?
Representative Stewart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I don't know if we really fleshed that out to the extent necessary to answer your question today.
Chairman Childers.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I guess I'm curious that a few years ago we hired a number of employees because of the coal bed methane inspection. In other words, inspecting that they're doing their programs correctly and so forth. Admittedly, that slowed down a lot, but those extra employees, did we ever catch up? And then also, we have the issue in Pavilion, and I would hope that the EPA doesn't make the final decision on that, that the state of Wyoming makes the decision. And in other words, personnel would be handling that. And landfills, as the good representative behind me was asking about, it just seems to me that there's still a lot of programs that have to be covered. Was that discussion held?
Representative Wallace.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I thought I would just chime in on what some of the discussion was in committee. As I recall, there was conversation about all the employees that we did add to deal with the backlog of coal bed methane permits, and when that play diminished dramatically, the department didn't lose any employees. They merely shifted them over to other places like solid waste. And so the discussion in committee was really that there are probably more employees there covering the vital functions of the agency than there need be, and that through attrition, as a humane way of kind of tempering that back to what we felt was actually the real need there.
Representative Stewart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was reminded by my colleague from JAC that we noticed a jump by 12 employees in the solid and hazardous waste a couple of years ago. They were transferred from water quality. And you do bring up a good point. The overall growth in the agency has been slow over the last, since 08, to accommodate for growth in our minerals industry. All good points about issues around our state that DEQ is working on. And we thought that this could be an opportunity to bring that back to 08 levels. I remember that coming up. How that impacts their workload, as I've said, I can assure you that DEQ has a different opinion on how this footnote would affect them.
Chairman McComey.
Well, thank you. That's exactly my point. It's specific to solid waste. When it was 4 years ago, we started saying and starting to focus in on all the solid waste problems we're having in the state. The Minerals Committee started looking at these things, and that necessitated more people to deal with some of these issues and to watch this. I would have been more comfortable with saying there would be some attrition could take place, six people could, and let the department decide where this would take place.
Chairman Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. we did have quite a bit of discussion, and again, we were trying to slow down the growth. And if any member sees that there's a need per more research with DEQ that the footnote needs to be eliminated, you can bring an amendment on second or third reading to deal with the issue if you have a concern. Thank you.
Is there any further discussion on Section 20? Any further discussion on Section 20? Question being called. All in favor of Section 20, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no. Section 20 has passed Committee of the Whole. Chairman Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move Section 21, the Department of Audit, and we'll have Representative Wallace present that.
Representative Wallace.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We're going to see if we can speed this up a little bit. This is a fairly simple budget. You got $25.38 million. The first three footnotes all have to do with, they were all governor's recs. You can read the numbers as well as I can. They all have to do with IT, OCIO, computer maintenance costs, et cetera. The only one out of the ordinary is the last one, which was the governor actually denied this, but the committee felt it was important, and that was to put $15,724 back into general fund and $5,241 federal funds for IT staff training for this audit department that takes a hard look at our revenue, our accounting, and our financial systems in the state. So with that, I'll answer any questions.
Is there any discussion on Section 21? Question being called. All in favor of Section 21, please say aye. Opposed? No. Section 21 has passed Committee of the Whole. Representative or Chairman Berger.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move Section 23, Public Service Commission. Again, this is a quite simple bill, and the biggest difference here is that we went with the governor's recommendations to replace federal funding for two existing positions and for a filing technician and for analyst positions. And this originally came about with stimulus dollars. And the reason we're continuing forward with these two positions is that, as many of you know, excuse me, the PSC has increased the number of hearings, has just grown with the general rate cases. And in order for us to serve the constituents of Wyoming, it's necessary for us to continue with this program. And the remaining of their appropriations have to do with technology. And if there aren't any questions on this division, I would call for the question.
All right, is there any further discussion on Section 23? Question being called. All in favor of Section 23, please say aye. Opposed? No. Section 23 has passed Committee of the Whole. Moving on to Section 24, Chairman Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move Section 24, State Parks and Historic Sites. And I would defer to Representative Edmonds.
Representative Edmonds.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, ladies and gentlemen. In the spirit of moving things along, speeding them up, I present Section 24, State Parks and Cultural Resources. First item up we have is IT. This is $596 for more IT software. All software throughout all of the agency budgets were approved by the OCIO ahead of time. Number two is another one dealing with OCIO. Number three and then number seven are actually commingled, and so I'm going to take them together. And in chronological order of how we did it, actually number seven happened first. We adopted the governor's recommendation for $350,000 for electronic archiving. They actually asked for, this is phase two of their electronic archiving, for those of you who are here for the past budget, you'll remember this. They originally asked for $1,167,228. The governor gave them $350,000. However, item number three in our governor's letter number two that we received, he made the decision to go ahead and give them the rest for a total of $1,167,228, and we did approve that. So three and seven go together. Number four, we adopted the governor's rec for $250,000 for more of their Humanities Council grants. This is a one-time funding. Number five, the good representative from Sheridan had asked about the We the People program, and there it is, $100,000 general fund for the We the People program, with a footnote adding that it is one-time. funding. And if you're looking for that, you can go to page 23 of your House budget bill. The House budget bill, page 23, actually has the footnote talking about We the People. Number six, we denied the governor's recommendation for $2 million general fund to go into the cultural trust fund. We said no to that. I'm going to skip seven. I already discussed that. Number eight, we adopted the governor's rec for $200,000 for some park maintenance equipment. If you actually go, and I have their budget, if you want to look through the list on pages 61, 62, and 63 of their spiral-bound budget, it has a whole two-page list of all kinds of park equipment and heavy equipment. What we did is we gave them $200,000, and we're going to let them prioritize on what they want to. It certainly doesn't cover their whole list. They asked for a lot more than that. We gave them, and the governor gave them $200,000. We adopted the governor's recommendation on number nine for $347.43 for continued increased costs in the MVMS. That's the Motor Vehicle Management Services. That just has to do with all the costs of having a fleet of vehicles, increased gas and that sort of thing. Number 10, general fund $50,000 for the park restaurant pump outs, one-time funding. They asked for $270,000. The governor denied all of it, but 50 just to do a few extra pump outs in their park restrooms. I think you know what that means. Number 11, $80,000 for the pine beetle mitigation in the parks. They actually asked for $183,345. The agency had already gotten $80,000 in their 11-12 budget. The governor felt, and we concurred, that they have enough money so far to continue the current level of mitigation on the beetles. So we simply gave them $80,000 more for a total of $160,000. Number 12, we adopted the governor's recs for $100,000 for more conservation programs, one-time funding.
Chairman Korbberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The $2 million that was denied on the governor's budget for the Cultural Trust Fund, does that basically mean there is no money then in the Cultural Trust Fund, or did it just reduce the amount that was requested?
Chairman Berger.
Thank you, and Madam Chairman, it just does not increase the Cultural Trust Fund. So it was to add two more million to the corpus. So it's still intact. And really what they'll be doing is working off the interest to still give out grant awards.
Is there any further discussion of Section 24? Any further discussion of Section 24? Question being called. All in favor of Section 24, please say aye. Opposed, no. Section 24 has passed Committee of the Whole. Our next section is number 27. Chairman Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move Section 27, School Facilities Commission, and I defer to Representative Harshman to discuss the operations budget.
Representative Harshman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I almost said Madam Chair. I was looking at Madam Chair of Operations. Oh, long day. Okay, folks, this has really gotten to be a lot easier budget since we've moved the CapCon piece to Senate File 105, which I think is on Committee of the Whole today over there. So you'll see all the CapCon projects, which used to be contained in this part section of the budget. As the good chairwoman talked about, we broke out AML, school CapCon, and then the regular budget bill. Back in the day, they used to have six budget bills, we were told, and then there was a process to condense them, and now we're kind of going back the other way a little bit. But anyway, so this budget, they have 15 employees, and you can see the first two footnotes on Agency 27 are the first one actually is for the IT software equipment, and that's the OCIO. The second one is just an amendment on the 900 series, which I made on a lot of these. It's a $40,000 deal. I think we've really, as you know, at the end of the budget, we're going to have those zero base next year, these contracts that go all over the place. The JC on 3 and 4, that's the movement of some money to Senate File 105 for projects. And then number 5 is the JC adopted governor's rec of $101 million for major maintenance funding for the biennium. And that's a formula-driven thing that's in statute, and districts know what they're going to get, and that kind of thing. I can answer questions later about that if you'd like. Number 6, the JC adopted the governor's rec of $6 million for engineering and technical support. Part of this is to finish the closeout audits. We used to have a system where it was a block grant to the commission. We had very little involvement. That has changed. We now, well, at least the JC bill, I don't know how it's going to come out of the Senate. We fund projects, and
We actually see the projects that we appropriate. You see them in the bill instead of just a block grant. Well, some of that still needs audited. So we've run two audits on this agency. This will be the final closeout. The new director welcomes this and wants this to kind of clear the deck, so to speak, of the last 10 years and go from there. The assessment piece is something that hasn't been done since the MGT days. And some MGT days, some of you folks know what I'm referring to, is the initial study of all the buildings in the state. And really, your condition scores now have been arrived at from MGT data minus any major maintenance improvements. That's an old, old deal. So we want to get out and make sure as we move forward now that we have the best data on capacity, number one, because the old list used to hide capacity. So the Campbell Counties, there was a Douglas Elementary, there's several others that really didn't rise up on the list because they might be a little bit under capacity, but they're still in a not very good school. Anyway, I think we're kind of getting to the point, unless it all blows up across the building over there in the next 3 days, to where we're getting a better system, I think. So I'd stand for any questions. Thank you.
Discussing Section 27, Chairman McComey.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. The 300 and some thousand that's going to be now out of here in the budget, the bill over there, would you discuss a little bit about carryover from biennium to biennium? I think the body needs to learn about that.
Representative Harshman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. At any one time, I just checked actually this month, there's like $297 million in the school CapCon account. At one time, that fund built up to almost $800 million. There was just no schools being built, even though we had appropriated the money. So out of that $300 million that's out there right now today, and it's probably got a burn rate of about $20 million a month is their average in this agency, those are all attached to projects. So it's not like, somebody has got a school in design and maybe starting construction right now. But school CapCon is a tricky thing. All of us want it to be done in one biennium, and then we move on to the next one. And really, it just never happens that way, really, even under the best-case scenario. Once you bring stakeholders in, you meet, you plan, you design, you find some ground if it's new ground, you construct. Even for a small elementary, it's at best cases two, but usually it's a three-year deal. Junior highs, high school, get out there 4 or 5 years. So it takes a little while. And so what we've done the last few years, last three or four budgets, we have frankly have funded the project. And then we move it off the deck, clear the deck with it. And what had happened in the past, there's an ability to move funds from one project to the next project if it's lower ranked. So you'll see if when Centerfile 105 comes over, there's like $15 million in kind of an unfunded liability. Schools are out there building. They don't have enough money because money was swept from their project to pay other projects. There's a lot of names for that out in the world. I'm not going to say them on the floor, but basically we were betting on future appropriations. And we're trying to end that where we now fund the project, clear it off the deck, who's next on the list, fund the project. So is that an answer to your question? Good, Chairman. Thank you.
Mr. Minority, floor leader.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I do have a question about process in terms of Senate File 105 and House Bill 001, the budget bill. How are we going to reconcile the two dollar amounts that's contained in House Bill 10110 and Senate File 105? What's the process to reconcile those two?
Representative Harshman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My best answer, and maybe the good chairman, is once we, whatever we decide to fund in 105, that'll make a conforming amendment to the school CapCon account. So whether we cut school CapCon some or we increase some, that'll all get worked out in the final days by staff before it's signed by the governor. They'll keep track of that, almost like the golden rod. It just kind of goes up and down.
Chairman Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just add an addendum that really that Senate File 105 is self-contained. So all those CapCon projects, it's correct, the good chairman of SFC will, but it will reflect on the golden rod. And this is the budget we're discussing right now is specifically the operations day-to-day.
Any further discussion on Section 27? Any further discussion on Section 27? Question being called for. All in favor of Section 27, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Section 27 has passed committee of the whole. On to Section 29. Chairman Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move Section 29. The Wyoming Water Development Office and Representative Steward will give you the information.
Representative Steward.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I bring you Wyoming Water Development Office, and the office is responsible for overseeing all of the Water Development Commission projects. As you can see from your budget and your cheat sheet, the budget for the office is $8.1 million. The money that we use for the water development is dedicated revenues, dedicated below-the-cap severance tax dollars that flow into Water Development Account 1. And that's the Account 1 is new development. We take money out of that to fund the office for administration. Ladies and gentlemen, I can tell you that we're seeing no growth in this budget. In fact, we're seeing in the Gov's recommendations some reductions. In the footnotes 1 and 2, we incorporated Gov's recs that we saw the office experience some reduction in their budget. Now, to track through the rest of the JAC actions, we did hear from the Director of Water Development that there could be some shortfalls in Account 2, that's rehab. And to address that, Gov's recs, or the governor recommended an amount of almost $9.5 million to flow from the interest of Account 3, Account 3 being our set aside for large storage projects. The interest generated from Account 3 was just that amount, about $9.5 million. He diverted that interest into Account 2. What we did in JAC, looked at that and got good testimony from the director that we finally decided that the needs for Account 3 far outweighed these immediate short-term effects from that they're seeing in Account 2. And we decided to leave the interest from Account 3 going back into Account 3 and basically said to the director to live within your means in Account 2. The next line you'll see under the water development, we appropriated some money for the Gillette-Madison pipeline again. Governor recommended a total of $30 million to flow to the account or to the office that we have set up for the Gillette-Madison pipeline. Of that $30 million amount, and we talked about some of this morning, a little over $23 million of that we will be using AML dollars. And the balance of that, $6.975 million, will be general fund dollars that we will be appropriating to the Gillette-Madison pipeline to bring that total to $30 million. Just in preparation, we're not done yet with this Campbell County project, but we're starting to see the end of it. There will still be some more appropriations going into the Gillette-Madison pipeline. Again, what we're seeing is no growth, in fact, a reduction, and we're staying with the same 26 employees. And I'd stand for questions.
Representative Roscoe.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just have a question for the committee. What projects out of Water Account 3 are coming up? Are there any big, what is this big expense that you felt the need to keep that $9 million in there? Thank you.
Representative Steward.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I do have a list that I could provide the questioner. The list is has about a dozen projects, most of them in the Green River Basin, storage projects that when we look at the total amount that all of those projects come to, they far exceed the amount we have in Water Development Account 3 at the present time.
Representative Yeagy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just wondering why we're taking that $6.7 million from general funds to the water project, the Madison project, instead of out of the water accounts.
Representative Stewart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We made a policy decision a couple of years ago to fund this project not out of the traditional water development accounts. It's a significant project, upwards of $200 million, that warranted its own separate bill that was brought, and we made a commitment to do it with different funding than the traditional sources. If we had decided to use those traditional sources, we wouldn't have been funding any other projects in the state while we were doing that.
Are there any further comments on Section 29? Any question being called on Section 29? All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Section 29 has passed Committee of the Whole. Our next section is Section 32. Chairman Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move Section 32, Wyoming Infrastructure Authority, and Representative Harshman will discuss that budget.
Representative Harshman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for waking me up there. No, I am ready. It's two full-time employees, five-member board. There are currently seven projects, and the Wyoming Infrastructure Authority is all about transmission. And you folks on minerals, you hear this a lot. And there's seven, I understand, the testimony we had, are in the works right now to really take our coal, gas generated, and wind generated electricity to other parts. So stand for any questions.
Representative Stupson.
Mr. Chairman, it sounded like there was a reference to two full-time employees, but it looks on the bill that there's zero employees listed under that section. Just wanted an explanation of that.
Representative Parchman.
Thank you, and I'll look. I don't think they're generally funded, maybe they are, but that's two in this budget book. It's special service funds. Let me look it up in the book here, but there are two employees, but I don't, and they're in the book, but they're not on your cheat sheet. And one is the executive director, and then like a secretary assistant, staff assistant person.
Is there any further discussion on Section 32? Any further discussion on Section 32? Question being called on Section 32. All in favor, please say aye. Those opposed, say no. Section 32 has passed Committee of the Whole. Chairman Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move Section 37, State Engineer. Representative Stewart.
Representative Stewart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a minute, Mr. Chairman. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for letting me bring Agency 37, State Engineer. Again, what we see, Mr. Chairman, is another agency that is experiencing no growth in their budget, with no growth in employees or their budget. Just to briefly go through some of the changes, the JAC actions. When you look at your cheat sheet, this, without going into all the footnotes, you can see JAC actions were zero. We adopted all the Gov's recs. So what you see in front of you is an agency request that the governor recommended to JAC that we approved. Again, you see the first three footnotes. with approval of IT equipment and the OCIO conforming amendments. There, and of course, this footnote 4, a very small amount for one-time funding for some data entry. They have been experiencing a lot of IT work in the state engineer's office over the last few years, and I think they've become a model for how we should be addressing some of our IT work. Now, we adopted the Gov's Rec going down to number 6, a small amount of money to help with the Colorado River Endangered Fish Program, and some money for the Well Drillers Board travel. Now, just to let you know that what a conservative budget this is, when you look through the budget book, just a little FYI, there was an effort to perhaps fund some extra positions within the state engineer's office, and they wanted to fund these positions through overtime in their budget that was not being utilized. Well, the governor caught on to that and said, well, I'm not only going to deny your these requests for extra positions, we're going to eliminate some of that funding in your overtime part of your budget, which is why you'll see such a flat budget here, too. We did eliminate the Gov's Recs, incorporated some of those reductions, and I would stand for questions, Mr. Chair.
Is there any further discussion on Section 37? Chairman McComey.
Thank you. I noticed the $12 million figure here for Board of Control. Are those some of the people that are out supposedly monitoring the ditches, the weirs? Is this what this is? And was there any discussion about how well they're doing their job?
Representative Stewart.
Yes, there was. And, of course, we know that our state is divided into 4 divisions. And with each division, we have someone at the head of that division who is a member of the Board of Control. And they oversee water administration for the whole state. And yes, they are all of the water commissioners in all of your towns. They are... They oversee water administration for the whole state of Wyoming. And it's a rather large budget, mostly employees.
Any further discussion on Section 37? Any further discussion on Section 37? Question being called. All in favor of Section 37, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Section 37 has passed Committee of the Whole. Our next section is number 39, Chairman Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move Section 39, Wildlife Natural Resource Trust, and defer to Representative Esquivel for presentation.
Representative Esquivel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just 3 little footnotes on this budget. Number 1, the OCIO Information and Technology Service Consolidation. Number 2, the $6 million AML that we discussed earlier from House Bill 121. And the third one was adopting the governor's rec for $5 million to be added in footnote 1, specifying deposit into the wildlife natural resource account.
Chairman Korberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to make sure that I understand this budget. Do we now have a standard budget for the Wildlife Trust Fund projects that's $10 million every 2 years? Is that now a standard budget item for their budget? That's my first question. And then I guess I'd like to know the discussion between putting $5 million into the corpus for the Wildlife Trust Fund, but not the $2 million for the Cultural Trust Fund. Thank you.
Representative Esquivel.
Well, I'm going to refer that to our good chairman to see if, but as I recall, the JAC was just looking at the general fund dollars that were available, and it's just the figure we had come up with at that point.
Chairman Berger?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. With the standard budget, it's actually $5 million that's a standard budget. And then there actually was just a motion to deny the governor's rec on the cultural trust fund.
Is there any further discussion of Section 39? Any further discussion of Section 39? Question being called for. Everyone in favor of Section 39, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Section 39 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Our next section is number 40, Chairman Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move Section 40, Game and Fish Commission. Representative Edmonds will give you the explanation.
Representative Edmonds.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ladies and gentlemen, item number one and number two are dealing again with IT and OCIO. Number three, the JCA, we adopted the governor's recommendation to reduce special revenues by $90,000. This has to do with the aquatic invasive species, their decal fee collections. We wanted it to reflect what was actually happening when they originally built their budget. I think they overestimated, and so we wanted to better reflect, and we did so by decreasing their special revenues by $90,000. Number four and number eight are interconnected. Those are both, if you notice, requests for replacement vehicles. They received $50,000 for each, so a total of $100,000. They're in two different divisions. Number four is in their brucellosis division, and number eight is actually in the CWCS, the Comprehensive Wildlife Management Strategy Division. We gave them, they had a list of things they were looking for. The governor recommended $50,000, and then they can just pick whichever items are the most worn out, and that's what we did. We agreed with the governor. On number five, we adopted the governor's rec to reduce by $8,157. This has to do with their elk traps, and this is a contractual thing that they do because they don't feel they're going to have as much movement on these traps this year in the feeding grounds. They didn't need as much money, and so we reduced that. Number six is another reduction of $100,000. It has to do with the completion of the sage grouse data collection. For a more detailed understanding of that, if you'd like to go to page 26 of their budget, I have it at my desk. You can kind of read some of their rationale behind that reduction. And then number seven, we have the governor's rec to reduce 210-852. This has to do with two positions that were eliminated originally, and I have a copy of the session laws if you would like to look at. Under vacant positions, we originally eliminated those two positions, and then there were some support costs. So this is kind of a cleanup item. There were some support costs that hadn't gotten taken out, and we did so this time, and I will stand for questions.
Chairman Childers.
Mr. Chairman, was all of the large projects paid for that was requested?
Representative Edmonds. Chairman Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Large projects will come in the capital construction budget, which will work tomorrow.
Come in on a bill?
They'll come in the capital construction budget book.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I know. We're all a little bit rusty, but we'll address all of those type of projects along with the Section 300s tomorrow.
Okay. Thank you.
Is there any further discussion of Section 40? Any further discussion of Section 40? Question being called. All in favor of Section 40, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Section 40 has passed Committee of the Whole. Moving on to the next section, 41, Chairman Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move Section 41, Fire Prevention and Electrical Safety, and we'll have Representative Stewart present the budget.
Representative Stewart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I bring you agency, 41, Fire Prevention and Electrical Safety. Ladies and gentlemen, we have three divisions within this agency administration, Fire Prevention and Electrical Safety Administration, and also training. This agency conducts fire and life safety and electrical inspections. They train firefighters, provide fire and safety education programs to children, collect and analyze fire data, conduct non-structural plan reviews, and license all electricians in the state. again, a quick look at your cheat sheet. You'll see the JAC actions adopted all of the Gov's recs, and with no changes. We have a relatively flat budget, no growth, 36 employees. The first few footnotes are the conforming OCIO amendments, as well as IT purchases. Again, we can't emphasize how much we respected our ability to stay up on these one-time expenses for our IT hardware. We see a request of $8,700 for increased motor vehicle expenses, one-time funding in footnote 4. And then footnote 5, what that reflected, and you'll see that addresses some $38,000 in SR funds, special revenue funds, these are fees that they collect. What that footnote means that we're giving them spending authority to utilize some additional special revenues that they bring in. And I'd stand for any questions.
Chairman McComey.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker. No, not in the form of a question, but I'd like the body to understand that a few years ago, this agency was not very highly thought of. Their budgets were questioned. And right now, I think this is a very clean agency, and they're doing a heck of a job, and I'd just like to compliment them.
Thank you, Chairman McComey. Is there any further discussion of Section 41? Question being called. All those in favor of Section 41, please say aye. Those opposed, no. Section 41 has passed Committee of the Whole. Our next section is number 42. Chairman Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move Section 42, Geological Survey, and Representative Esquivel will explain.
Representative Esquivel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just two little footnotes on Geological Survey, adopting Governor's Rec for $140,308 General Fund for IT Software, and footnote number 2, in Governor's Letter 3, to move that $30,180 General Fund of the OCIO for Information and Technology Services.
Is there any further comment on Section 42? Question being called on Section 42. All in favor, please say aye. Those opposed, no. Section 42 has passed Committee of the Whole. Our next section is number 44. Chairman Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move Section 44, Insurance Department, and Representative Edmonds will explain.
Representative Edmonds.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ladies and gentlemen, the Insurance Department, footnote, or item number 1 is dealing with IT. The big item is item number 2. We adopted the governor's recommendation for $2.5 million in additional spending. This simply gives the Insurance Department their budget authority to continue to spend or to spend an increase in their enterprise funds. If you remember the Wyoming small employer, the small group, is actually paid by premiums paid by insurance companies, and so they've seen an increase in those claims and need a little more spending authority, and we gave them that.
Is there any further discussion on Section 44? Any further discussion on Section 44? Question being called on Section 44. Those in favor, please say aye. Those opposed, no. Section 44 has passed Committee of the Whole. Our next section is number 45. Chairman Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move Section 45, the Department of Transportation. Representative Harshman will give you an explanation.
Representative Harshman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On the cheat sheet on 45, there's, I think, 6 divisions: administration, administrative services, law enforcement. You can see that all these are special revenue, highway funds, or internal service funds. Very little is general fund until we get down here to the bottom. If you flip over, on at least on my cheat sheet, Wyolink, Aeronautics, Operational Services. The footnotes, if you're looking at the footnotes, the first one is JAC adopted for the OCIO IT software equipment. The second one is actually reductions in the budget through efficiencies that the agency brought to us. And this is spread kind of throughout their, but they saved $113,000 on printing maps by simply not putting the date on the map, so they didn't have to throw them away at the end of the year, and they can keep using them. You know, roads don't change that quickly. So just little things like that, they were able to come up with efficiencies. Footnote number three. Now, they came in, I think they wanted six driver's license examiners. It's probably an issue we've all heard about with the Real ID, and it's a little different process now to get a driver's license than back in the day. So we responded to that, provided three here, and that's a biennial number, and that's out of highway monies S7. Those aren't generally funded. Number four, GovsRex on, this is $1.2 million in federal funds for increased driver's license costs due to the implementation of Real ID. Number five, GovsRec, $233,000 for additional hearing costs. And some of these are internal with personnel. Some of them are external with lawsuits and contractors and right-of-ways. And they've had an increased cost, so we provided a little more money for those services. I think I'm on number six. We denied that they wanted six dispatchers. They're trying to do a lot of work. They're having a lot of turnover. We denied, but we did give two dispatcher positions and allowed them to transfer from anywhere else other than Highway Patrol. And at any given time, this is the largest agency in government, 2,000 employees. At any given time, you know, as at a moment in time, can have a pretty large vacancy list. Okay. Number seven is federal funds that go specifically to drunk driving, high-speed enforcement, education, those kind of things. Number eight is a transfer of one person from Port of Entry Unit, and this was a department suggestion that they could be better used in the driver services unit, so they now have an extra position on those licenses. What they will do is, we're told, is hire some part-timers because there's key peak load times when folks all show up, like on a Monday and a Friday afternoon, to get their driver's license. We're told that Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday mornings are the slow time. So they're going to not have folks sitting around during those times. They're going to try to beef it up when the demand is there. Number nine is a simple fund switch from general fund to pooled interest for the WildLink. Number 10 is air service enhancements. This is in the aeronautics division. There are certain cities that have gotten in here with, I understand there's a match. I don't know. I think there's some interest in that. But it is a match to try to bring air service into the state. Number 11 is the $50 million AML money was moved to House Bill 121, which we heard this morning. $30 million is for highways, and the JEC added back in $20 million in general fund for highways. And number 12, the last one there, is for this House initiative that we've had for a couple of years, is railroad quiet zones, and that's set to expire. We just said that any unobligated funds will stay in that account and are effective immediately, and will roll into this next biennium. I'd stand for any questions.
Representative Throne.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I thank the good coach for all that information, but I just have a very basic question, which I want to make sure I understand. How much money is going to roads, and where is it coming from?
Representative Harshman.
Thank you for the question, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. The actual, this is only the general fund budget. I don't think I said the actual commission budget is about $1 billion per biennium for road projects, $500 million a year. Now, the actual, we've just got into this business the last couple of bienniums of putting general fund dollars into highways. We just haven't done it, but we've had the money. So we put in one year, I think we put 200, another year, 100. Well, this year, we now have, there's $100 million in for highways. And I believe 70 of that is general fund, 30 is AML dollars.
And that's correct, Representative.
That's working off the top of my head, but I've had a lot of blows to the head, so I can't remember all that. Thank you.
Representative Patton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to ask the Appropriations Committee and the discussion that you had with the aeronautics, or perhaps that's a discussion of transportation and aeronautics. that the lifeblood of many of our small communities is dependent upon the commercial air service, air freight, as well as air transportation of people. What kind of programs are going on there that you feel are warranted or that we can enhance?
Representative Harshman.
Well, I'm probably not the best guy to answer this question, because if you look at those, a good representative from Sheridan, you see Cheyenne, Cody, Gillette, Jackson, Rock Springs. There's no airport in the middle of the state that Chuck Yeager once took off from back in the day when it was a Army Air Base. So that is the one program out there to try to bring carriers in. Now, there's other money here for airport improvements, those kind of issues, but as far as enhancement of service, we're trying to bring large carriers in. The capital city just lost the flight to Dallas here in the end of March. Some of those funds are used to lure those folks in to kind of give them a guarantee or to help it make it more marketable. I don't know if I answered that, but.
Representative Madden.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was just wondering if the Appropriations Committee just had any discussion about the wisdom or the appropriateness of using general fund money to fund maintenance of roads, given the fact that 53% of the wear and tear on roads is really accounted for by people other than those that generate money for the general fund.
Representative Harshman.
Do you have anything to say about what can be done about this?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I sure do. Thanks for asking. I remember when I was a freshman in 2003, I think I was at this same podium, same desk, and I had a bill for a gasoline tax. I think it was 2 pennies. Of course, I got smacked down a little bit, and I brought one again another time, and I've tried at different venues. But the bottom line is a fuel tax, which ours is the lowest, or really the second lowest in the United States, certainly lower. And, you know, economics 101, and you know this better than I do, the good doctor, but really the first person to benefit in disparate taxing situations is the supplier. And so there's folks in Scotts Bluff and Torrington getting their gasoline from the same suppliers, where one is 10 cents higher across the border, fuel tax, than ours, same price for gasoline. So there's issues out there. Now, hey, we've tried all kind of mechanisms. I know there was one to do 5 cents, 1 penny a year for 5 years. I almost put a bill in the last minute, 10 pennies a year. 10 pennies, 1 penny a year over 10 years. I've had enough beatings this year, so I didn't submit it. So, but I think fuel tax is an important issue. I don't think we're poor enough yet, but you're right. 53% of the fuel tax is paid by non-Wyoming people.
Representative Madden.
Yeah, just one more question. Do you feel that replacing this general fund money with a fuel tax would be appropriate in a budget amendment?
Representative Harshman.
I think that would probably violate our rules, as that would have to start in the Revenue Committee, I believe. Just off the top of my head, I'm sure there's folks that know the answer to that better than I. But, you know, we generally, that's a lot of policy in that one. But I guess you could push the envelope, see what happened, I guess.
Chairman Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't think that's doable, but it's a great idea. I think if there are no other questions, we'd call for the question.
Is there any further discussion on Section 45? Any further discussion on Section 45? Question being called. All those in favor of Section 45, please say aye. Those opposed? No. Section 45 has passed Committee of the Whole. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is the part where we leave Committee of the Whole for the budget bill, rise and report on it, then go back into Committee of the Whole for discussion of a few other bills. We've got about 45 bills outstanding. I don't anticipate, with the volume of budget amendments that have been submitted already, that we will have much time for general file on Thursday, although I will try and squeeze it in. I'm trying to do everything I can to get every bill heard, but we'll just work as best and fast as we can. With that, Mr. Chairman, I move that the Committee of the Whole rise and report with respect to the action taken today in Committee of the Whole on the budget bill, House Bill 1.
You have heard the motion. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, no. The reading clerk will read today's action of the Committee of the Whole.
Reading clerk will read today's action of Committee of the Whole on the budget bill.
Mr. Speaker, with respect to the budget bill 1, the Committee of the Whole took action as follows. Section 1, adopted. Section 2, adopted. Section 3, adopted. Section 4, adopted. Section 5, adopted. Section 6, adopted. Section 7, adopted. Section 8, adopted. Section 9, adopted. Section 10, adopted. Section 11, adopted. Section 14, adopted. Section 15, adopted. Section 20, adopted. Section 21, adopted. Section 23, adopted. Section 24, adopted. Section 27, adopted. Section 29, adopted. Section 32, adopted. Section 37, adopted. Section 39, adopted. Section 40, adopted. Section 41, adopted. Section 42, adopted. Section 44, adopted. Section 45, adopted. All action taken today on House Bill 1, recommended do pass. Signed, Representative Gay, Chairman.
Mr. Speaker, I move for the adoption of today's action taken on the budget bill.
Let's see here. You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. In accordance with Joint Rule 14-1, further Committee of the Whole action on the budget bill will be continued until the next legislative day. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move that the House resolve itself back into Committee of the Whole, and please insert House Bill 90 after House Bill 93. That was the one we started yesterday, had to re-refer, and hopefully we don't have a false start on it again today.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The House is resolved back into the Committee of the Whole. Chairman Gay.
The Committee of the Whole will please come to order. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 93. Chairman Teeters.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole...
Pardon me. I'm out of line. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 93, introduced by Representative Korberg, an act relating to daycare facilities certification exemption. This bill was referred to Committee Number 4, Education, which recommended that it do pass with amendments. Ayes, Bechtel, Burkhart, Freeman, Croker, Laux, Madden, Teeters, no, Connolly, Crone. Signed, Representative Teeters, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Teeters?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that House Bill 93 do pass. And I further move the adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment, and I will turn the explanation of the bill and the Standing Committee Amendment over to the sponsor.
Chairman Korberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to take this opportunity to first dispense of the Standing Committee Amendment Number 1. And if you will go to your bill, it's on page 1, line 13, after minors. We inserted the language, the committee did, provided that no more than two of the minors are under the age of 12 months. So if there are no questions on the Standing Committee Amendment, I ask for a vote on the Standing Committee.
Question being called. All in favor of Standing Committee, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Chair is in doubt. Those in favor, please stand. Standing Committee Amendment has passed Committee of the Whole. Back on the bill, Chairman Korberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, our child care facility statutes have two parts. We have identified in certain circumstances where child care facilities need to be licensed by the state of Wyoming. And then we adopted a section that said under certain circumstances, our child care facilities do not need to be licensed. This bill today deals only with one exception, one exemption for non-licensing, and that is the first one. Statute now says that you cannot, if you are going to provide child care for more than two individuals, two children, you need to be licensed. My change now says it relaxes that exemption. I believe it allows parents more option, and it now says that you can now watch no more than five children, providing that not more than two of them are infants without being licensed. That's the essence of the bill. The bill has come about through a lot of effort and work on a lot of people's parts, but I think it addresses a couple of unique situations that I think seem to come up. I chose five. A lot of people ask why five. I think the average household has somewhere between two and three children. Therefore, if you have two children that are ages 3 to 5, two that might be going to school, this would allow a parent to use the same child care provider for the younger child all day long. The other two children can get off the bus and they can go to the same daycare provider. It allows for the parent to make that choice. It allows for the siblings to spend some time together before the parents come and pick them up. Same thing with the snow day. You have a daycare provider that's watching two children. They come from different families. The children, they have other children that are going to school. All of a sudden you have a snow day. So now you have a parent who has one child in a daycare that's not licensed, and then they're saying, well, what am I going to do with my other two children because it's a snow day? I either stay home or I have to find someone else to watch the other child, because the unlicensed daycare provider right now cannot take all four of those children for even one day without violating state statute. So I just think that this option, I think it's a good option. I think it's a good number. I think it's interesting when I looked in the rules and regs that have been adopted by the Department of Family Services right now. If you're in a licensed daycare center that's in a home, you can watch up to the maximum capacity is 10 children. But in any one category, if you're watching children 3 to 5 years of age, it only takes one staff person to watch those 10 children. So I just, to me, 5 seems like a good number to come to allow an unlicensed daycare provider to watch up to 5 children. And I think we've made a good standing committee amendment that limits that, especially if you're going to watch 2 or more infants. So I guess I would stand for any questions that the body has and let you guys have the discussion. Thank you.
Chairman Brown.
Mr. Chairman, I don't know anything about this stuff. I don't have any kids. But I have an email from a child care provider in my community, and I just want to read part of that. She says, I'm one of 5 regional coordinators for the State Home Child Care Provider Association and a member of the National Association and of our local daycare association child. I cannot see any positive results in changing the licensing requirement to allow a person to have 5 children and no license. It is currently 2 children and no license requirement. A licensed provider currently needs to have current CPR, first aid, continuing education hours, annual fire inspection, annual health inspection, and 3 annual DFS inspections. These are for the safety of the children in our care and always thought for the safety of my own family. There are many opportunities to get training and work with peers who may have suggestions for the problem you have. Licensing brings us together for meetings and training. If homes can get 5 children, there will be no inspections, education requirements, etc., and that puts children in possible danger if there are no new eyes in the home. So I would simply submit that to the body as one person who's concerned about this bill.
Representative Madden.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The a number of comments I think are appropriate here, and one of the comments I think I'd like to make is the issue of consumer choice, and the idea behind licenses is not to protect providers or the vendors of services. Licensing is to protect consumers. And what we're doing by relaxing this just a little bit is saying that consumers really have the latitude if they've got a neighbor across the street that can handle a couple of school-age kids between the time they get out of school and the time that the mother or the father gets off of work at 5, it's a consumer choice whether you want to use that service or not. I get 2 types of messages on this issue, and you can easily dichotomize them into providers writing you a letter and saying, you know, please don't do this because it's not safe for children. But that, if you read between the lines, what they're really telling you is I don't want to have a competitive threat where it's possible I could lose a little business. That's really what they're saying. The fact that they're worried about some stranger's child being in jeopardy really should be the responsibility of parents. That's what it used to be like. That's what parents are for. I know in my family, I have a couple of daughters now with kids, and they like to do their own search. I mean, they like to do their own due diligence on these kind of issues. So keep in mind when you get the emails, always make sure you look to see if it's really from a parent that is saying, please keep the government in my face to protect me a little bit on this, or whether it's really a provider writing you a note saying it's dangerous for children, you know, because of one reason or another, and that they're really between the lines quite unabashedly telling you that they don't want a competitive threat. And licensing, first and foremost, is to protect consumers. It's not to protect the vendors or the marketplace. Thank you.
Representative Barbuto.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My understanding of the statutes with regard to this topic are that there's already an exception provided for parents who have a mutual agreement with other parents for daycare. I don't know how compensation plays into that or if it does at all. I think that maybe that would alleviate some of the concerns of my colleague from Johnson County. The only other point I want to bring is that when you decide to go into daycare, just like any other sort of business, you have to meet certain standards and requirements, and I think that's part of what the licensing process is. So I'm not sure that this would be a good move on our part. I'm not sure what the motivation for this piece of legislation is, or that it's critical to the state of Wyoming right now. So I'd hope you'd join me in voting no this afternoon. Thank you.
Representative Moniz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In response to a comment made earlier that we have to be careful how we interpret the emails we receive, I would agree with that. I happen to have an email from a parent, and if you don't mind, I'd like to read that as well. It says, "We all use tools and acquire knowledge to help us make choices. This is especially important when our children's health, welfare, and safety is at stake. Daycare licensing is a tool I use to decide what is best for my family." I think that's critical. I choose a licensed daycare professional for several reasons and feel strongly that information is power. By alleviating the necessity for daycare professionals to be licensed, you fail to regulate the care of our next generation. That is serious, especially considering the number of child molesters being exposed in the news recently. I believe licensing weeds out a lot of the undesirables. With that, I think it's important to realize that we do have parents that evaluate the providers based on that licensing requirement. Thank you.
Chairman McComey.
Well, thank you. And as I read these, as I heard these letters being read or emails being read, they make the good ladies, the good sponsors' point. These parents are going into this situation, they're looking to see, and they make the choice if I want a licensed provider or if I'm very comfortable with these people that I already know. And it's a parental choice to do this. I happen to have the next bill up in committee following this, and I heard a lot of testimony. There was parents there saying, well, I went through all this, and I looked here and I looked there, and I decided that I was going to take the licensed one. But that was a choice, and they did the research. Everybody did the research. So why are we to say that I, as a parent, must choose that provider if there's only so many children? And I'm very comfortable with the amendment. That's what swung me over. The amendment made it very clear of what could be done. So on and for, the bill is amended.
Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If I have a question for the bringer of the bill, how onerous of a process is the certification process to become registered?
Chairman Korberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I've heard considerable testimony on this piece of legislation over the years, as well as have received considerable emails, and the licensing process, I guess it just depends on the perspective of the individual. I've heard testimony that they say it's not that onerous. Then I've heard other people comment to me privately that it is very difficult. I can tell you right now that the rules and regulations, there's 177 pages. So I get both. Just to answer your question honestly, it goes both ways. Some say not so bad, others say it's pretty onerous.
Representative Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On and for the bill, again, I trust the parents' wisdom and decisions in vetting out who's taking care of their children more than I do the licensing of daycare centers. So give them the choice. Let them make that decision whether they can go to this very small provided daycare, most likely a neighbor. Let them do this. The parents are smart. I think smarter than what we do down here sometimes.
Is there any more discussion on the bill?
Yeah, just one time, please. Thank you, Mr.
Representative Harshman.
Thank you. Just real quick, I don't know how I'm going to vote for sure. I think the amendment made the bill better, but I do. There's a lot of things we don't know, and so we do this a lot. But I do know this. So if a person is licensed, they have gone through a background check. Okay, that's an I know that. If they are licensed, they've had CPR training. If they are licensed, they've had an inspection to make sure that all fire codes, health and safety, and all that stuff. So I don't know. You know, we went through this thing 4, 5, 6 years ago, fought over it, instituted this, thought we made some headway. Now we're backing up a little bit. So I don't know. There's a lot we don't know, but there are a few things we do know that licensing is done. So thank you.
Chairman Harvey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm a co-sponsor on this bill, and I know some of you think that that would be very unusual, consider the discussion that we had several years ago. But I there are some things that I think that need to be pointed out. When you are a licensed child care provider, you do have to go through a home inspection, a fire inspection. You have to have CPR and first aid. You have to have... your home has to be up to fire code. You have to have nutritional training and provide nutritional meals for your children. You have to have so many STARS hours of training that help keep you on the cutting edge of early childhood development. So I think all of those are pluses, but I also think they're minuses. I've talked to several people who used to be in the child care business, and one of them said when their husband came home and the inspector was there, he was appalled at what they were looking through and looking at, and he just simply said, "That's it, get out of my house." I had a friend that I went to school with, and she said, I already know this stuff, and she said, opened a can of chicken noodle soup, put in some frozen mixed vegetables, put in a can of water, put in some extra chicken, fed the kids. And the inspector wrote down, tried to feed 5 kids with 1 can of diluted soup. And she said, "That's it, I'm done." So I think that it can go both ways. I believe that in those first 5 years, it is the formative years of a child, and I think that the more tools you have in your toolbox, that's a really good idea. But I think that there are child care providers out there that are not licensed, that have a lot of natural instincts, that have a lot of good things going for them. They're loving, they're caring, and they give the bonding that children need. And so I've met some of those. I've met them, and I trust my children. I trust my grandchildren to them. So I think that you have to kind of balance out, is there room for both? And that's why I'm on this bill, is that the good representative from House District 28 and I chaired a meeting, a community meeting. There were 60 people there, and we heard lots and lots and lots of kids that were now in their 20s and 30s that were babysat by this single person, and they talked about the loving and caring environment that they had there, and I think that's something you just can't replace. She chose not to be licensed. I think that parents deserve the opportunity to choose. And I think that if they choose unlicensed over caring, and not to say that licensed means not caring, I'm just saying there are situations out there when someone who is not licensed is a good child care provider. And I think that even when licensed people go through background checks, their partners that move in and out are not background checked. So there's still no 100% guarantee that a licensed child care home is a perfect environment. I just think that this bill allows for choice.
Chairman Korberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I know the hour's late, but I think that there is a piece of information that I think you will all find useful and that I think even adds more validity to why this is a good bill. We have we receive federal funding, subsidy funding for child care. And if you're a licensed facility, you can receive the funding. If you are not licensed and you are operating under one of the exemptions that we have allowed in statute right now, you can receive the federal funding if you meet certain requirements. You have to meet the minimum health and safety standards. You have to be certified in infant child CPR and first aid. You have to keep immunization records of the children. You have to undergo a background check. Those are just a few of the things that you have to do as an unlicensed provider falling under our statutes in order to receive this federal funding subsidy. Now, guess how many of our unlicensed daycare providers last fiscal year, were able to make use of this funding and met these standards, plus there are more, 789. So please don't tell me that they're not safe, that they don't care, that they don't meet the minimum standards, and that it is not a safety issue, because they do. So I think this is a reasonable change in the exemptions in statute, and I urge your aye vote. Thank you.
Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Korberg's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that House Bill number 93 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Division is called. All those in favor, please stand. House Bill 93 has passed Committee of the Whole. Ladies and gentlemen, I want to apologize for getting off to a bit of a dubious start when we reconvened after the budget hearings. You get into a sort of certain rhythm. Having said that, the next bill for our consideration is House Bill number 90. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 90, introduced by Representative Lebner, an act relating to natural resources baseline scientific assessments. This bill is referred to Committee Number 9, Business, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, which recommended it do pass with amendments. Ayes, Byrd, Greer, Hunt, Kasparic, Lockhart, Moniz, Roscoe, Stepson, Suwana Sudave, signed Representative Lockhart, Chairman. The bill was further referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations, which recommended it do pass. Ayes, Berger, Edmonds, Escobel, Harshman, Pedersen, Wallace, no, Stewart, signed, Representative Berger, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Lockhart?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Bill number 90 do pass, and I further move the adoption of the Standing Committee amendments, and I turn the explanation of both the bill and the amendment over to our good Majority Leader.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I bring you House Bill number 90, Baseline Scientific Assessments. This bill comes to us as a recommendation from our friends in the Beehive State, who suddenly found, without much input, much to the substitution of local control, huge parcels of their land unavailable for multiple use. Their recommendation was to pass legislation as they have to map roads, document facilities, measure stream flows, and create a historical database. That way the state has a defensible record in court for air quality, land quality, surface water development, trails, so that when things like resource management plans come, wilderness area designations, mineral designations as being off limits, the science is there. The way that this bill works is if somebody breaks something, we know it. If somebody doesn't break anything, we also know it. The Standing Committee Amendment makes the bill. The amendment requires the assessment to be conducted only on public lands and that all records are public unless there's a cooperation with a private entity that is designated as trade secrets. The bill allows the governor to supervise the collection of baseline assessments. Items that can be surveyed include air quality, surface and groundwater, economic development, infrastructure, roads, reservoirs, corrals, fences, all other man-made structures on public lands, historic trails, historic sites, livestock grazing, geological analysis, species rights of way. Governor has the authority to coordinate the data collection between his employees and those agencies that aren't necessarily his employees. Bill allows collaboration with private entities with amendment protection of data and trade secrets provided by private entities, but making other data collected public. It provides for a central repository of the data and development of rules and regulations for implementing this section. There is a $500,000 appropriation, and this type of information is necessary as defensive bureaucracy creeps into our daily lives at every level, and those who think that they know more about how to run our state become bolder and bolder at telling us how to run our state. This is a tool for us to protect ourselves, and with that, I'd stand for any questions.
Question being called. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
This on the Standing Committee Amendment. Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Standing Committee Amendment is adopted. We're back on the bill. Question being called. All those in favor of... It's getting late in the afternoon. Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Lockhart's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that House Bill number 90 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 90 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Chairman Teeters.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so. Read the bill.
I'm off my... Sorry, did it again. Next bill for our consideration is House Joint Resolution 6. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Joint Resolution number 6, introduced by Representative Stewart. A joint resolution requesting Congress to issue a moratorium on the closing of United States Postal Service offices in Wyoming. This bill is referred to Committee number 4, Education, which recommended it do pass. Ayes, Brechtel, Burkhart, Connolly, Freeman, Croker, Crone, Laux, Teeters, no, Madden, signed Representative Teeters, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Teeters?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a recommendation that House Joint Resolution 6 do pass. And I will turn the explanation of joint resolution over to the good gentleman from the Upper North Platte.
Representative Stewart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Again, I'm here to speak to you. Seems like I've been at the mic all day. To bring you, I think, a very timely resolution. As I've said before, most of us have endured through this last year the issue of the United States Postal Service trying to close a lot of our rural post offices in our state. What we've seen, there's 43 post offices in Wyoming on the chopping block, and being now the representative of the future most rural House district in the state, I feel compelled to represent our rural constituency in the state of Wyoming. Mr. Chairman, as I said, this is a timely issue. Around in December, we found out that the Postal Service was going to delay the closure of post offices in Wyoming, due in part to a lot of reaction from our small communities. Based on all the calls and letters from local governments and citizens that I've been receiving, I saw a window of opportunity that perhaps the legislature could put a line in the sand, so to speak, and make a statement that we think there are other ways that they can balance the budget other than on the backs of our rural post offices. And again, you know, in talking around to other people in other communities, there may be a sense, someone would say, well, you know, on the list, off the list kind of thing. And people saying, well, perhaps they're not trying to close my post office. Yeah, no big deal. But, of course, we could be seeing a domino effect if we allow this to continue, that when they find out that closing rural post offices in Wyoming, that it really only will affect less than 1% of their budget, that they will come back and that they do need to go back to the drawing board and find other ways to balance their budget. Mr. Speaker, we can all read this resolution. When we get to page 3, section 1, I would just remind everyone that I am not suggesting in the least that we should suggest the United States Postal Service deficit spend in their agency. What we're trying to do is to have a more rational approach to this issue and balance the budget where it can be more meaningful, and we can keep our post offices in our small communities to keep our communities thriving and vibrant. Thank you, Mr. I would stand for questions.
Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Teeter's motion when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with the recommendation that House Joint Resolution 6 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, say no. House Joint Resolution 6 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 17. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 17, introduced by Representative Gingrey, an act relating to local governments regarding budget hearings. This bill was referred to Committee Number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, which recommended it do pass. Ayes, Blickery, Byrd, Illaway, Yagi, Croker, Patton, Roscoe, Stepson, Swanson-Sudan. Signed, representing Illaway, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Illaway?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that House Bill 17 do pass. There are no amendments, and the good author of this House bill will discuss it.
Mr. Speaker Pro Tem.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This bill idea came to me from my local school board, and then at the hearing the other day in Corporations, school board people all came, and school boards across the state were in support. And then counties came in, and they liked it, and towns liked it, too. So it's one that had a lot of support to it. Essentially, here's what the issue was. When you do your budget hearing, usually do it in June, or you would hope you would be doing your budget prior to the start of your fiscal year. You remember, your fiscal year starts July 1st, so it
just makes logical sense, that you would approve the budget prior to the start of the fiscal year. However, in statute, we actually have it a little different. Let me take counties, for example. Counties actually are supposed to approve their budget the third week of July. They have anywhere from the second Monday in July to the third Monday in July. And somewhere in that time period, they need to have their budget hearing. They can't have it prior to the second Monday in July, and they can't have it after the second Monday in July. Towns are a little bit different. They are the second Tuesday in June to the third Tuesday in June. And then school districts and community colleges are real unique. They have to have it on the third, I think it's the third Wednesday in July. And they don't get to any wiggle room. It's that particular day, third Wednesday in July. So the question became, why is it so specific, and why do some of these end up in July? So asked around, found the answers. There's two answers, actually. One is, in particularly for county government, sometimes they don't know how they're going to resolve potentially all their assessment protests. The problem with that is, unless you're a real small county that someone's big is protesting their assessment, but that's going to really affect your budget, that's the only people that would affect. If you're a bigger county, someone's protesting their taxes, probably will not have a big effect on you. The other part was sometimes you don't know your carryover. So June 30th, you don't know what your carryover is going to be. Again, that affects more smaller counties or smaller towns, but bigger towns and bigger counties, they can estimate their carryover, and you can be off by a little bit because you're dealing with bigger numbers. So what this bill does is take away that first date, the date that you can't have your budget hearing prior to. It takes that away, but it still leaves the maximum date there. So if you are one of those smaller counties or towns that you're not sure what your carryover is going to be, or maybe you have a tax protest, you still have until that third week in July to have it. So it's not changing that. So it won't change anything for the smaller ones. But if you're a little bit bigger and you definitely have all your numbers all put together, you can go ahead and have your budget hearings prior to that date. So, for example, if you're a county, instead of waiting till the third Tuesday in July, you could actually have your budget hearing in June and be ready to go on July 1st. Here's where this becomes problematic for some counties. Because you don't approve your budget till the third week in July, you can't approve any of your vouchers. So essentially everyone goes without getting paid for the first 3 weeks of July. So vendors who need to be paid, paychecks get a little weird in counties that do this because you're waiting for that third week in July where you actually approve the budget that started 3 weeks prior. Okay, so that's what it's doing for counties and towns, and then for school districts, what it's doing, and there was some good testimony where one of the individuals testified that actually, one of the legislators that talked about it, was that they serve both on a school district and a BOCES board. Will both have to meet on that third Wednesday in July, and they never could go anywhere. You always had to make sure you were around on that third Wednesday in July. This would give a little bit more leeway to school districts. If they wanted to do it the day before. The other problem is a lot of times the school districts, they have trouble finding enough of a quorum to actually do it always on that third Wednesday in July. So all this is doing is taking away those dates, and everyone seemed to be in strong support of it that testified. So I stand for any questions.
Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Illaway's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that House Bill 17 do pass. Please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say no. House Bill 17 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 72. The reading clerk will please read the bill.
House Bill 72, introduced by Representative McComey. An act relating to school districts, juvenile detention facility placements. This bill is referred to Committee Number 4, Education, which recommended it do pass. Ayes, Brechtel, Burkhart, Connolly, Freeman, Croker, Crone, Laux, Madden, Teeters. Signed, Representative Teeters, Chairman.
Chairman Teeters, what is your pleasure?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a recommendation that House Bill 72 do pass. And I will pass the explanation of the bill over to the sponsor. It's good for you, so vote for it.
Representative McComey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, this bill will correct some ambiguous language in a statute that sometimes causes school districts that have juvenile detention facilities in their area some problems with funding. And that problem is if the agreements with the what is known as the resident district, otherwise the district where the juvenile came from, and the district that's providing the care don't make all the cross all the T's and word every kind of an agreement just exactly right, the district that's providing the care gets stuck with the money they receive to provide for that student as a local resource, and it takes away from the funding that they're supposed to receive for their own district. What this does is puts it under the exceptions on page 2, line 14, after the comma, starts with but. It talks about excluding the exclusions in this, and this is Romanet 9 of a whole series of Romanets, but this is the exclusion, and the best explanation is in the fiscal note. It says, this bill provides a way for a resident school districts to count non-resident juvenile detention facility placements in their average daily membership, ADM, and contract with the non-resident school district to provide educational services through a tuition agreement. Tuition payments in these cases would not count as local revenue to the non-resident school district since they are not counting the student, non-resident student in their ADM. There's no fiscal impact. And with that, I'd stand for explanations or call for the question.
Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Teeter's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that House Bill number 72 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say no. House Bill 72 has passed Committee of the Whole. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. Chairman, I move that the Committee of the Whole rise and report.
You have heard the motion. All those in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. Motion carries.
The reading clerk will read the committee of the whole report.
Mr. Speaker, your committee of the whole, having had under consideration bills on general file, beg leave to report as follows. House Bill 93, amended. Recommended do pass. House Bill 90, amended. Recommended do pass. House Joint Resolution Number 6, recommended do pass. House Bill 17, recommended do pass. House Bill 72, recommended do pass. Signed, Representative Gay, Chairman.
Mr. Speaker, I move adoption of the Committee of the Whole report.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Committee of the Whole report is adopted. Congratulations. We are at that order of business. Messages from the Senate.
Message 114, Mr. Speaker. The bills listed below pass the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. Senate File 6, County Memorial Hospital District's staggered terms. Ayes 30, no 0. Signed, Donnie Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 115. Mr. Speaker, the bills listed below pass the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. Senate File 7, Election Districts Revisions. Ayes 30, no 0. Signed, Donnie Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 116. Mr. Speaker, the bills listed below pass the Senate on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. Senate File 62, Electrical Installation Licensing Exemptions. Ayes 30, no 0. Signed, Diane Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 117. Mr. Speaker, the bills listed below pass the Senate on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. Senate File 67, Real Estate Brokers and Sales Agents Opinions on Value. Ayes 29, noes 1. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 118. Mr. Speaker, the bills listed below pass the Senate on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. Senate File 74, Severance Tax Trona Valuation. Ayes 21, noes 9. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk.
Reports from standing committees.
Mr. Speaker, your committee number 5, Agriculture, State, and Public Lands and Water Resources, to whom is referred House Bill 7, respectfully report, same back to the House with recommendation that it do pass with amendments. Ayes, Blake, Camel, Davison, Eklund, Laux, Moniz, Semlek, Zwanitzer-Dan, No, Hunt, signed, Representative Semlek, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 5, Agriculture, State, and Public Lands and Water Resources, to whom is referred House Bill 1, House Bill 18, respectfully report, same back to the House, with the recommendation that it do pass with the following amendments. Ayes, Blake, Camel, Davison, Eklund, Hunt, Laux, Moniz, Semlek, No, Zwanitzer-Dan, signed, Representative Semlek, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 7, Corporations, Elections and Political Subdivisions, to whom was referred House Bill 34, respectfully report same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Blickery, Byrd, Illaway, Yeagy, Patton, Roscoe, Zwanitzer-Dan. No, Croker, Stepson. Signed, Representative Illaway, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 7, Elections, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, to whom is referred House Bill 76, respectfully report same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass with the following amendments. Ayes, Blickery, Byrd, Illaway, Yeagy, Croker, Patton, Roscoe, Stubson. No, Zwanitzer-Dan. Signed, Representative Illaway, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, to whom is referred House Bill 85, respectfully report same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass with the following amendments. Ayes, Blickery, Illaway, Yeagy, Croker, Stepson, Zwanitzer-Dan. No, Byrd, Patton, Roscoe, signed, Representative Illaway, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, to whom is referred House Bill 92, respectfully report same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Blickery, Byrd, Illaway, Yeagy, Croker, Patton, Roscoe, Stubson, Zwanitzer-Dan, signed, Representative Illaway, Chairman.
Any referrals? Chairman Illaway.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to re-refer House Bill 85 to your committee number 2, Appropriations.
It's been moved for referral of House Bill 85 to committee number 2, Appropriations. Hearing no objection, it is so referred. Chairman Simlek.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to re-refer House Bill 7 to committee number 2 as it has an appropriation.
I request that House Bill 7 be re-referred to number 2, Appropriations. Seeing no objection, it is so referred. Committee announcements. Chairman Korberg.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 8, Transportation, is going to meet today, 15 minutes after adjournment, to hear our final House Bill 48, 80 miles per hour speed limit.
Chairman Harvey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, will meet tomorrow, 10 minutes after adjournment in room 817 to hear Mr. Speaker's bill, House Bill 119, Health Insurance Sale of Out-of-State Policies.
Chairman Teeters.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number for education will meet Wednesday upon adjournment in H-10 for consideration of the following bills. House Bill 77, Charter School ADM, and House Bill 108, PTSB Teacher Certification.
Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And this is a heads up for the Minerals Committee. Those who are willing, we'd like to have you show up at a quarter of 10 tomorrow morning to consider what we'd be looking at in the interim with what we know so far. So it's just an informal meeting, but to discuss interim topics.
Chairman Childers.
Mr. Speaker, for those that are wondering, your committee number 3 is not having a meeting on Friday. However, we'll probably have one on Monday to discuss interim topics, so think about it.
Vice Chairman Stubson.
Mr. Speaker, can I have privilege of the floor?
Oh, sorry. Yes, please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Members, I just wanted to remind you that tomorrow morning over in the Commons area of the Hirschler Building, the Capitol Commission will be having its Bible study at 6:30 a.m. with orange juice, coffee, and good grub.
Mr. Majority, floor leader, that clears the desk.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. May I have privilege of the floor?
Yes, please. Go ahead.
Friday, from 6 a.m. to 9 a.m., the local radio talk show host from my community will be down interviewing folks. If you are interested in a 15-minute slot appearing on that local radio talk show, come see me and we will have you sign up for a 15-minute slot. Ladies and gentlemen, great debate. The state of Wyoming should be proud of what happened here today. Tomorrow we have House Bill 121 on second reading and the other 5 bills that we did. Then we will finish the budget bill and see what we can get to on Committee of the Whole. The statistics are that we have 19 bills listed on general file. There are 22 others in committee. So we'll have 31 House bills to do before Friday at crossover if we want to get through all of them. Expect a medium-sized day tomorrow, a long day Thursday, and whatever it takes on Friday. With that, Mr. Chairman and Mr. Speaker, I move that the House adjourn until tomorrow, Wednesday, February 22nd, 2011, at 10 a.m.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The House is adjourned. February 22nd, 2012, 10 a.m.